on this episode of Pottages.
It suffers from everything the Blackwer Greymon arc does and doesn't give us back Blackwer Greymon's butt.
Whatever. This is basically Haruhi's Endless Eight, but with Royal Knights.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
But these are just like places that we like were tourists at for like half an episode. So
wasn't even that interesting of a tour.
Who would be the first to die unceremoniously in Game of Thrones?
Teruo, because he's who is he?
Your password. You can use mine to get on the internet.
I did this.
Welcome to Pottages, episode 405, The Curious Incident of the Digital World in the Nighttime.
The Royal Knight's Arc.
Recorded April 16, 2017 and Easter Sunday.
Pottages is your critically nostalgic, Easter-themed analytical tour through the Digimon anime. I'm Jeff Ruberg, and I'm joined by my fellow Easter bunnies, Ashley McDonald.
Give me your obsessions!
I don't think that's how the Easter Bunny goes, but...
Give me your obsessions!
Our rabbi Easter Bunny...
Jesus.
Asher Soffman.
Give me your candy!
And our Trailmon Easter Bunny, Andrew Soffman.
Ashley, did you mean possessions?
No, I definitely meant obsessions.
This is going to be really confusing when it comes
religion?
Out like...
What is religion except not an obsession?
Oh, deep there. Let's some deep thoughts coming out of this.
Asher's like, don't.
Maybe religion is just bogus and there is no such thing as religion. And this is going to sound really confusing when this comes out in like July. And you're like, yeah, what are they talking about?
Like, we said we recorded it on Easter.
Anyway, this week we're looking at the Royal Knights arc of Digimon Frontier with episodes 38 through 46. So here's a quick recap.
In episode 38, it can't be! Lusamon reappears, aka Prophecy No Evil, Prophet Hear No Evil, Prophet Do No Evil. Despite passing the Cherubimon midterm, the kids are held back and forced to repeat Digital World History 101 for the fifth time.
In episode 39, The Man in the Moon is You, aka Fly Me to the Moon and Let Me Play Among the Starmon, the kids wake up in a neighborhood without any cell signal and struggle to get a taxi back to their hotel.
In episode The Bully Pulpit, aka I Am Being Bullied Right Now, a poorly utilized thesaurus tries to steal from the kids on the way to Steel Town, but instead they steal themselves for the introduction of even more unimportant characters. Also, Angemon dies again. Take that, adventure!
In episode 41, Jerks and the Beanstalk, aka Mamma Mia. I don't know if people remember that Mamma Mon are in the episode. Just, by the way, remember, Mamma Mon are in the episode.
I did not get that joke until you explained it.
The kids chase the Royal Knights as they struggle to defeat a beanstalk. The kids say goodbye to the alt Digidestined, who seem to have completely forgotten that their Angemon just died.
In episode 42, Glean Eggs and Ham, aka Stork Dorks, the kids fight to prevent Twitter's decision to remove the egg avatar, but in the end, the Republican Knights successfully defund Planned Parenthood.
In episode 43, Bad to the Bones, aka The Devil Came Down to Flame Terminal, the kids try to reignite an old flame, but end up back at square one before the Royal Knights eat square one like it's a takeout meal.
In episode 44, Now You See It, Now You Don't, aka The Castle Can't Protect the Data If There Is No Castle, Toji reunites with a friend from his old rock band before his meteoric fall from grace. Not Wizardmon keeps reading off his copy of the adventure script and becomes the ghost of Not Wizardmon.
In episode 45, all aboard the Tag Team Express, aka the Royal Knights vs. Snowballs. The kids return to Akihabara one last time at the end of their trip. The Royal Knights are distracted by JP's brilliant plan to make a rudimentary slide puzzle, and Blackwer Greymon destroys the penultimate Destiny Stone.
In episode 46, To Make the World Go Away, aka Support Your Local Library, the legendary warriors venture to the most thrilling domain, their local library.
Yay!
Before the Republican Knights try to cut its funding for good. The kids sing about library cards, contemplate murdering the librarian, and let the digital world fall to ruin.
Okay, so general impressions about this arc. Just quickly summarizing what happens in this arc. They get a prophecy that reminds them that Lucemon is on the horizon. The Royal Knights appear, decimate them. They go to the moon. They get back from the moon. Spend an episode getting back from the moon. And then there are, what is it, 6 episodes in a row of dealing with the Royal Knights?
It's basically the Destiny Stones arc, but it's boring.
Wait, we're covering 9 episodes. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
8.
I'm pretty 46 sure. minus 30 plus 1.
I think
1.
It's 9.
It's 9.
Oh, wait, you're right.
So there's 7 episodes after they get back from the moon. And so there's the Beanstalk episode, which then leads into the... there's the Steel Town episode with the new kids, which then leads into the Beanstalk episode. Then there's Primary Village. Then there's Flame Town, Flame Terminal. Then there's Strathmon's Castle, Autumn Leaf Fair, and Ophanimon's Library Castle. Yeah, it basically is, in a lot of ways, the Black War Greymon Destiny Stone arc. But
without the Royal Knights are not nearly as fun as Black War Greymon.
Yeah, it suffers from everything the Black War Greymon arc does and doesn't give us back Black War Greymon's butt.
Yes, oh my gosh, how can I forget?
Instead, it gives us more of Zephyrmon?
Kazemon?
What's Kazemon's butt?
To be objective. To be objective, Black War Greymon's butt that we commented on so much was actually after the Destiny Zone arc, was when he was in the real world near Mount Fuji.
How did you know that?
For some reason, I remember the picture. I think because it was like during the showdown with War Greymon at Mount Fuji.
Was he? Oh my god! Okay, sure.
It's an important moment in the podcast. Jeez.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, but
yes. The height of this podcast.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This arc was both silly and, like, very heavy. And I was like, I just don't care, Frontier. Stop trying to make me care.
So I went into this arc with the super, super, like, the lowest expectations I've ever had, which is, you know, saying something. So I actually enjoyed it more than I thought I would. But the fatigue of never getting to win just wears on you, man. Like, so by, like... At the halfway point, I was like, this arc isn't as bad as I remember it being. And then past the halfway point, I was like, if I can watch an arc and not actually pay attention to it and miss nothing, then they really need to think about what they're doing here.
And then you texted me, like, yesterday saying how boring it was.
Yeah, that was before I reached the halfway point, actually.
Oh, really?
I watched 11 episodes of Digimon yesterday.
Oh, yeah, because you had to watch.
Yeah. Why 11?
Because I didn't watch the last
the other two.
Didn't happen.
I actually had a similar experience where I was like, okay, these silly episodes, I kind of actually like them. And then by the end, I was like, it wasn't even that they didn't win. It's more that they never acknowledge how much they suck. Like, they have that one brief moment where they're like, we can't win. And then they're like, no, we totally can. Let's go do it. And I'm like, what? No, you actually can't, though. Like, what are you doing? Stop.
Yeah.
And then they also seem to have a different strategy at some point. Like, it seemed to imply that their strategy was like, we'll take the data just so that they can't have it. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Please do that.
No.
They never back here, and they didn't do it. So then
said that, I was like, no, don't do it.
I was like, do it.
You'll make people homeless.
Do it.
We have very different priorities as people.
It was gonna get taken anyway. If they can foil somebody's plan, like, you gotta do these things.
I don't think you do.
War is hard, even when there's only 4 people fighting it. Okay.
Okay. I mean, but there are different goals and objectives on both sides. I mean, the Royal Knights' objective is to revive Lucemon, and the collateral damage from that is collecting the data. You know, like destroying the world. The kids, where they're trying to, their main priority isn't to prevent Lucemon's revival. Their main priority is to protect the world, to protect the continental. Protect the data from being absorbed. So if they absorb one area to protect it, then they prevent Lucemon's revival, but don't protect the land, which is their main goal. So
yeah,
but doesn't it make more sense to just outright kill the Royal Knights? Because no matter how many times
I think if they could, they would.
Yeah,
yeah. I got the impression that they were trying.
I know, but it's either you beat them for good or they're just going to keep coming back forever until they take it.
But it's not a choice they have. They're trying to beat them for good and can't. So
yes.
It's just a matter of like, how do they, without being able to beat them, what can they do? And one thing they could do is absorb the data themselves and prevent Lucimon's revival as long as
That's
they can like.
What bad guys do.
I mean, it also did annoy me. Like, we do get to see some other Digimon fighting in this arc, but I'm just like, where did are all the Digimon dead? Where are they?
There are only 6 strong Digimon in the world, actually.
They apparently went to the moon, but like.
No, that's actually an open question I have, which is kind of like where we cut it. We cut it right when they get defeated for the, they lose the last area and then ride a tram onto the moon. And I remember, all I remember about that when they get to the moon is that they meet, Lopmon and Terrymon, right? No, Lopmon and Salamon. But I don't remember, like, is all of the digital world's population on the moon? Cause like, where were the Trailmon going? Like, everyone's homeless. And they don't have places to take them, but they're all just like, in every moment, there was like, okay, this problem's solved because the Tramon took the Digimon away. But like, exactly. Where are they taking them?
Yeah, it looked like there was some land that wasn't attached to the points that they were protecting, even up until the very last one. And then suddenly there was no more land. So, And also the kids could stand on the landless nothingness.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if the Digimon could do that too.
Well, I thought the implication was that they couldn't because they had to stand on like train terminals and stuff and they kept using all the flying.
Yeah, that's definitely what they implied up until the final moment where they lose the land and the kids are just standing.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, you, I guess you didn't want Digimon. I mean, this, like, that happens, like, when they're fighting Apocalypse in Adventure. You know, like, it's not a new thing. It's, yeah.
Yeah, but, like, when they were fighting Apocalypse in Adventure, at least they were floating. Here, they're, like, standing on nothing.
No, no. I'm thinking there are times before they float, I'm pretty sure, where they are just standing in the floaty area.
Okay,
pretty sure.
Maybe. I mean, it's been a while since we did Apocalypse. Mm.
Yeah.
Those are simpler times.
He just wanted pizza.
And hot and cold running water.
Yeah.
No, he had hot and cold running water.
What does Lucimon want? I don't know.
I just came up with a theory when we were talking about how they can stand on the ground. And I'm like, okay, well, if you can stand on the ground, then what is the point to having land there? And the main purpose of land is it obstructs vision. So Zoe, Lucimon could see up her skirt when there's no land there. And that's what they're mainly afraid of, I think.
Lucimon. We're taking Jeff off the podcast.
Yeah, we're not doing this anymore.
Side note, I mean, I'm sure they would come up otherwise, but like, there are still plenty of frustrating, like, oh, it's when they're coming back from space where like Zoe's skirt starts to fall while they're like heading 0G, and then it's like, oh no, don't look at me, like, no, just,
yeah,
you don't need to make these jokes, like, it's not necessary. You can have female characters without that, and Digimon did that for quite a while.
I mean, no, anytime you have a woman wearing a skirt, it's don't look at my skirt. I don't understand, there's nothing else that skirts could be good for unless,
well, it's a good thing when she digivolves she gets rid of the skirt and just has,
yeah, she just has panties.
Yeah.
So it's fine. But she's fine with people looking at her like that. That's fine.
Yeah. I'm holding back a little bit because I have more to say about the general arc structure in a topic about the arc structure. But any other like overall impressions of the arc as a whole?
It's boring.
It is pretty boring. And yeah, I think what Ashley was saying about like if you can just zone out and not miss much, that is rather telling.
That's bad writing.
Yeah. But I also feel like, I think for a lot, it's not just dependent on the show. I think for a lot of media, like, the level of what you get out of it depends on what you put into it. So, like, I think definitely for Digimon, where it's like, if you, like, don't give it much, it can be like, well, this was just bleh. But if you, like, pay closer attention, there are more things to appreciate. But I guess it's like, there's lots of media where the less you pay attention, the more you're, like, completely lost, and you're like, I totally missed stuff. Where Digimon's never like that. It's just like, yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, and also, like, yes, I did pay more attention, I think, in this arc than I have in previous Frontier arcs, because I was trying really hard to find something worthwhile out of this. But at the same time, like, it reads, or it watches, I suppose, very much like oh, this is how many episodes we have left in the season. This is how many we need to, like, save these for the interesting stuff that'll happen at the end. Like, you know, the final boss. What do we do in the meantime? How do we...
how do you bridge?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like, you don't need the Royal Knights, like, plot-wise. You just don't. Cherubimon was doing the exact same thing that they are doing now. The only difference is, oh, we can't beat these guys.
Yeah, I mean...
Wait, what were they doing the whole time?
They were collecting data for Lucimon.
But I mean, like, while they're doing the Cherubimon.
Into them, yeah.
Oh, they weren't revived until after Cherubimon died. Right. I think Lucimon needed a certain amount of data. You know, you get out what you put in.
Yes, so I mean, when Cherubimon's defeated, the, like, all the energy he absorbed goes back to Lucimon, which I guess could be enough for him to revive, to summon the Royal Knights or whatever, and then...
All two.
Yeah, all two of them.
Whatever. It's just, this is basically Haruhi's Endless Eight, but with...
No, it's not. No, it's not at all. It's not at all.
Endless Eight is more maddening.
So I guess... the main question I have about this arc as a whole, though, is, like, I think Frontier has a pretty big reputation for having this really long Royal Knights arc stretch. And I think it stands out for most people more than the stretch of Destiny Stone stuff in 02. I think most people just look at 02 and they're like, oh, 02 was all a mess. They're either like, I love 02, or it was all a mess. Whereas Frontier, people are either like, I love it, or, oh, that Royal Knights thing was like a fourth of the show, which it clearly isn't. But I do get the sense people think that...
Really? Wait, it's not the same as 02, where you're just like, Frontier... Because all of Frontier is a mess, so I don't understand why this arc is being picked on in particular, to be honest.
Well, I think it, like, is most visibly different than the others, and it's like... You know, like, it, like, 02 has so many different ideas, and, like, it definitely feels like they don't know where they're going at times, and, like, whereas Frontier has, like, a core, you know, like, they're going for, like, there's a central driving force through most of the series, and then there's only, like, one point where that's, like, dropped and then picked up again with something else. So it doesn't feel like it's just, like, a mess. It doesn't feel like the direction of the show overall is a mess. I mean, sure, you could argue it is in execution and details, and episode by episode, but not in the same way that 02 is...
I will buy this, although, like, the Emperor stuff in 02 is half of 02, and I don't really see how, like, that's so different than, like, Duskmon appears and he's the final legendary warrior sort of thing.
I mean, I could see your argument if you're equating Ken to Cherubimon. But, because, I mean, there's definitely more of a, there's a thrust beyond the first 25 episodes, because they go... You know, through to what, 37, where they defeat Cherubimon. And I think also, though, like, the episode, like, the Digimon Emperor arc doesn't quite feel like it has the same, like, forward momentum that the Cherubimon arc does. Anyway, we don't need to drive on that comparison too much. But I mean, this arc definitely feels like it, I think we all agree it's, like, dull and repetitive, but does it feel like it's, like, so much worse than the other arcs? My main question.
No.
No, it really doesn't.
That's my whole point, is, like, in the end, like, I do see...
In the end, it doesn't even matter.
In the end, it doesn't even matter, because they're the same. Like, they're the same level of, like, bad quality. We're like, how is this different than, like, crappy episode? I get that they're different villains, but it's just like, it's not really essentially that different than them having to fight all the legendary warriors.
So the first topic I wanted to talk more concretely about the structure of this arc and kind of look at it from, like, two different angles. The first of them is just, like, the plot structure of, like, okay, we need to make an arc of this many episodes, and the goal of it is that they need to fight several times and not win. It needs to be a string of unwinnable fights. And the second angle is that it's basically them retracing steps that they went through at the beginning of the show. So the first angle, like the unwinnable fights, like we've been alluding to before, it's very similar to the Destiny Stone arc of Adventure, but I think what is different about it, I think it feels more fatalistic or inevitable than that arc, because the way the Destiny Stone arc was spelled out was, if all the Destiny Stones are destroyed, all the worlds will end. So it's like, okay, that's not going to actually happen, right? Like, they need to stop Black Orgamma before he destroys all of them, or something's going to happen. And also, like, Black Orgamma wasn't totally evil, so there's a lot of, like, mystery and intrigue, like, what was going to like, how was that going to turn out? It wasn't clear that, like, once that was spot out, it wasn't clear that they were going to destroy all of them except for the last one, and save just the last one. I think that was a genuine, like, you had to figure that out as you went along. But this arc, the way it's spelled out, is Lucimon will be revived, and they're clearly going to, like, he's clearly set up to be a thing they fight. It would be weird to set him up and then be like, oh, they don't actually fight him because he's never actually revived. And the conditions for his revival are he absorbs all the world's data. So from that, like, just with that base level of information, it seems pretty clear that, like, they're going to absorb all the world's data. So the kids are going to lose every time. And I don't know, I mean, I'm curious if anyone has memories about that. I think we all going into this watch knew that's how it turned out. So we don't really have, like, a pure impression this time. But I'm curious if people remember when they first watched it, if they knew that they were going to lose every time.
Yeah, I don't remember very well. At this point, I was watching in Japanese online. And that's, I don't know, I feel like that's a different mood overall. Doing it that way, probably illegally.
probably.
Like, I really don't remember. I mean, I can't think of any legal way I could do that. But I think also at this point, we were older kids, is the thing. We were, how old were we?
Well, this was around 2002.
2002. So I was 13. I was 12, probably. I don't think I knew that they wouldn't ever beat the Royal Knights, but I knew they would have to fight Lucimon.
I guess the other question I have, like, the question is, like, is there anything interesting to this kind of dramatic irony? And on some level, it doesn't matter, because, like, what we're kind of concluding is that as kids, we didn't really pick up on the structure as being so obvious. But as adult viewers, I'm curious if anyone finds anything interesting about the dramatic irony of knowing they're going to lose every time and then watching them lose every time. Because I kind of, no. my hypothesis is there isn't. Yeah.
No, it's boring and discouraging. And I could have been doing something productive with my life, like making macaroni and cheese.
I mean, it's like...
Ash's review of this arc, I could have been making macaroni and cheese.
I could have been making macaroni and cheese. I mean, well, to me, again, it's about the lack of strategy. Like, if they lost in different ways each time, that could have been interesting. Mm-hmm. But each time it's just like,
they're overpowered.
Oh, we have to defeat them, so we will try basically the same strategy again.
There's and like then get overpowered time. And lose, right?
Sure.
Yeah, but on that note, actually, I think it's something that's, because one of the things I wrote down as like a complaint was actually that it's so inconsistent. And I think it's like a similar, it's almost like the opposite problem that you're describing. That what I think is inconsistent is the conditions required to extract data. They feel kind of they feel kind of like whatever the script needs at that moment, which is just a symptom of lazy plot execution, connecting dots.
Like that the land can protect the data.
Right. Like in some places they need a special, like for the Beanstalk Village, they need to like figure out the mystery behind the saying to get the land's data. I'm trying to remember other cases in this arc, but there was stuff in the, well, that was because the beanstalk had like seeped into the roots. There was at least an explanation given for that, which I thought was interesting. Primary
one
village
that I thought was kind of BSE was the one where JP could like shift around the town or whatever. I was like, no.
I mean, on one hand, I'm like, that's weird. Bogus. That's ridiculous. But it's like, it's kind of approximating. It's getting close to ideas of encryption. Like, it's kind of encryption, like,
Right, but that's why I was willing to forgive most of those things, because I was like, I get that you're trying to be like, it's digital, and, like, this is some sort of analogy to a real-world security practice, and I was like, okay, but, sure. Like,
just to be clear, so people don't misinterpret my words, it's not encryption. Encryption works by translating the data into something else so that when you look at the data, you can't figure out what it is. I'm sure they're, you know, like when you look at like historical encryption schemes, taking a book and just reordering the pages is not a good encryption scheme. And that's like a missed opportunity. I thought that like they could have just more explicitly mentioned encryption, and like maybe encryption at that point wasn't so much of a household term or concept. I mean, that it could also differ in Japan. Anyway, it just, I mean, the thing, like, Ashley and I talked about this before, in Meat Space, but the thing it reminded me of is the condition, especially the way the kids keep searching for the data themselves. In a way that makes no sense, because if they find it first, all they've done is helped the Royal Knights find it too. Like,
yeah.
If the thing they need to do to stop the Royal Knights from finding is fight the Royal Knights, they don't need to find the data and get there first and then fight the Royal Knights. They could just go fight the Royal Knights. Like, so by getting the data first, they just show them where it is and help them get to it. Especially since, as we talked about before, they're not willing to, like, absorb it themselves, because that would be counterproductive to their goal.
Yeah, except the Knights never take advantage of that either.
Hmm.
Yeah, like, they always seem confused.
Yeah, that's true. But the thing it reminded me of, the media part reminded me of, was Kingdom Hearts. Because Kingdom Hearts is like a very similar concept of someone trying to absorb the data / heart of worlds, and a character you play as a character who's trying to protect the worlds. And to make that concept make sense, they introduced the concept of, okay, if Sora gets to the heart of a world, he can lock it, and then it's safe. And it's like, I mean, it's frustrating because, like, of course, Frontier.
BS?
I think it does kind of end up being BS. Like, I think
more like, what isn't BS in that?
I think it, like, eventually ends up being retconned in Kingdom Hearts 2.653 Pi. But
cool, I knew it.
But also, like, I can see, like, from Frontier standpoint, the point is the need to lose. So, like, if there was an objective they could meet to protect everything, then, like, yeah, that kind of defeats the purpose of they need to lose. But it's just frustrating because it's like, there's no actual justification given. Like, they're acting like Sora. They're acting like there is a real reason for them to go find the data in a couple of those instances, and there isn't.
My thought for that was that was how they found the Royal Knights, period. Like, otherwise they wouldn't have any idea. Yeah.
Although, but, like, it didn't really make sense when there was multiple places that they could all be. Why did they always end up in the same place?
There was one episode where they actually gave decent reasoning about that.
Yeah, like, yeah, it's true.
We know where this one is, and so it's probably this one. But, like,
well, the problem was the penultimate episode. It was like, once they narrowed down to two choices, they could choose which one of the two it was.
Yeah, it's like, but when there were eight or whatever, like, seven, it's like, what? That doesn't.
Yeah.
That there was no explanation given for how they, like, if they were following the Royal Knights or something, that, anyway, that would have made more sense.
But clearly they weren't, because they never
went to
Royal Knights were always
right. I'm saying they should have had that as a concept. Yeah. Or just, like, added some characterization that the Royal Knights are teasing them and the Royal Knights are following them or something, but, like, that's never shown either. Anyway, and Ashley alluded to it before, but the last element of this, like, unwinnable fight thing that frustrating I want to talk about was, like, just the unbridled optimism the kids have. that, like Ashley said, they bring it up once. I think it's in episode 44, where they're like, oh, I guess we can't win. And they have, like, a pep talk. I'm like, okay, no, I guess we can. And now every time before and after that, there's like, yep, we're going to fight. We're going to win. And it's like, it's almost to the point of, like, if the show had competent characterization and just, like, general plot execution and writing, they would be delusional, you know, like, they'd be like, this is, like, bad, like, oh my god, I'm concerned for you guys how much you are deluded into this. But because it's Digimon, because, like, you kind of just, they need to be that optimistic, and, like, you expect those things to not connect very well, you're like, yeah, this is normal.
And, yeah,
I mean, I guess I appreciated in episode 46, I guess, where they're in the library and they're split off, like, they do have somewhat, it's not, like, super depressive. It's just kind of like, we do need to win. We are scared, but we do need to win or whatever. And I was like, okay, but you're not sad enough for me. And then, like, Takuya, like, falls asleep, and I'm just like, okay. Screw you, Digimon.
I mean, the last thing I'll mention about that, the unwinnable thing, though, is that, like, as much as it is, like, the complaints we're having about Frontier's tone and their optimism and stuff, like, I still think in that regard, it's handled so much better than Zero Two's aspect of this with the Destiny Stones, where it's like, the thing that's at stake with the Destiny Stones is the entire multiverse being destroyed and, like, the tone of the episode. Like, it's not so much about, like, their, because I think they have the same kind of, maybe I think they actually handled the, like, can we beat Black Oremon question better. Like, I think they are not so optimistic about it every time, and they're just like, oh, we have to do it. But their general tone, they still treat it like it's a after school activity when, like, the world is, like, keeps getting chipped away. And, like the episode where they go to defend the last Destiny Stone, they also, like, get soup beforehand and have, like, a wacky thing with the the Supai Jinx and stuff. So, like, I'm just, like, the general tone of, like, as much as their optimism doesn't make sense, like, they do a bunch to, like, show the other inhabitants of the digital world being, I don't know, like, reflecting the mood and misery of the world falling apart. And especially the, like, one episode where, like, Trailmon, they're riding a worm Trailmon, I guess it's on the way to Beanstalk Village, and he's just like, there's no use fighting, like, I've lost everyone, like, the whole world I've been going through is just gone, like, guy, like, and they repeat that through a lot of different characters, I think, throughout the episodes, and so I think they at least communicate that aspect a lot better than Zero Two.
I mean, I just am still frustrated that all of the Digimon in this world are apparently very cowardly, even though we have seen things like Gallantmon be there. I'm like, okay, if you went and got Gallantmon, can help you, like...
Wait, that's a royal knight.
Exactly. Like, it doesn't make sense.
I mean, okay, I was like, okay, I guess we did. I just don't know how many powerful Digimon there are, but we, yeah, in the backgrounds of those scenes, we have seen Digimon that should be really powerful.
I mean, the one that I'm thinking of is Zoe was like, it doesn't show her talking to Gallantmon, but it's when they're looking for information or something.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to imply that she's like directly talking to Gallantmon.
No, they do actually have Gallantmon talking explicitly, because the dub actually repeated the like Takato Gilmon voice dichotomy that the Japanese version never had. And so like, it's like, it's kind of like implied by the dub voices that that actually is a fusion of a human and Digimon, which is like, oh,
Okay. Or at least two Digimon.
Oh, that's true too.
I don't know. I just have difficulty accepting that this world that they would keep losing and like have no other strategy.
It's a very defeatist world.
Yeah, it's frustrating that like I guess one aspect of like the inconsistency to the requirements to absorb data, and I don't think you mentioned it, but like some like when they're fighting over the Village of Beginnings or Primary Village or whatever. The Voronoids are fighting for a while, and then they kind of lose, and then just absorb the data anyway. So, like,
yeah,
there was no point to the fighting.
Then it's like, it doesn't even matter. Whether they win or not, actually, anything they do in this span of episodes matters not.
Yeah.
But kind of, like, I can see why they would have had that inconsistency, because I think their point for doing it was to avoid repetitiveness. And like, clearly it didn't work very well. Clearly we still find it super repetitive. But if instead there was the same formula, if instead every place they went to was, we need to find the thing that protects the data, or we need to find the person that protects the data, we need to find the saying that you say that unlocks the data or something. If there was a single formula that worked for every location, that would get even older, even more repetitive.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I actually appreciated that they did beat the Royal Knights once, but it just,
Yeah.
They beat them in a fight, but they still won the overall fight conflict thing. Like,
it was pointless.
Yeah. I guess it's just the general thing of like they get like some overall big beats correctly, but then don't have the like connective tissue between them. So then like as critics or like fans or whatever, we like say, oh, you should have gotten the connective tissue better. But then it's like, okay, but then if you sacrifice the overall concepts to make it more bland so that things connect and cohere better. I think Asher, like, it's kind of what I would guess you would say about Tamers, is that like things connect and like are more cohesive, but like the thing as a whole is more bland. Is that accurately?
I mean, I don't think I care about the cohesion as much as you do, period. I don't mind if things are inconsistent. This is Digimon. They've been inconsistent for what, 15 years now? So like
20,
whatever math.
It'll be 30 by the time this episode comes out, so it's okay.
That doesn't bother me. It's the emotional component that bothers me, and it's just like it's just sucks.
Yeah. No, yeah. I understand that.
Like you keep comparing this to the Black War Greymon arc, but Black War Greymon is a more interesting character because they actually give him some depth. Like they give him his struggle if he's alive or not, and the Royal Knights are just evil. That's pretty much
like,
it.
The Royal Knights actually could be super interesting. There's an interesting power dynamic between the two of them, and we don't get it.
Yeah.
They don't give it to us. So, like, forget it.
The second angle I want to look at this is a pretty minor, so I'll kind of like skim over pretty quickly, but it's just the way this arc retraces the steps that they went through at the beginning of the show. So, I mean, I guess it's only a couple different, but the locations they revisit are Flame Terminal, Strafimon's Castle, / Forest Terminal, and the Autumn Leaf Fair. I was trying to think of, like, if this was a common thing that most Digimon seasons did, and the only things I could think of were, like, adventure explicit, like definitely does it with the Dark Masters. Like they like make a even stronger point about it then, that they like revisit the same beach they fought Shalmon, and like they fight as rookies and like, oh, we're stronger now than we were before. And I think that's they don't explicitly make that callback in this, but you kind of get the sense that like they're going back to these locations. They're, I guess they don't, you don't get that Victoria's like, we're back and we're so much stronger now, because they're just like, the area gets destroyed, they get defeated. So it kind of, kind of
there was
weird.
A little bit of it. There was a little bit of it, trying to think where it was. I think with the Koji one.
Oh, yeah, when they revisit the Gatsumon place, Easter Island, basically.
Yeah, like, I mean, they still lose overall, but, like, you can see how far they've come.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of muddled, because I feel like that's why I couldn't find like an actual like TV tropes entry for this concept, but I assume it's a pretty basic concept, and it's definitely in video games. Well, I don't know about explicit callbacks in video games, but I'm mostly thinking about Breath of the Wild and how I watched an analysis video recently that talked about how Breath of the Wild is kind of set up for that you would encounter these big enemies that are like, oh my god, I could never beat that, and then like you encounter them later and you're like, yeah, that's totally easy now. And anyway,
all open world games are like that,
right? And I think even less open world games probably have scripted moments like that. But it's kind of weird that Frontier's handling of it. So it seems like the point of using this concept is to show how far we've come, and Frontier is like, yeah, how far we've come, we still lost, still sucks.
Yeah.
Still
or you can compare it to every RPG ever and be like,
I don't.
This
think
is the place where I lost to that slime one time.
Yeah. Like, I don't think the point here was actually to be, oh, how far we've come. Wow. It was more like, look at these places you're fond of. Oh, gone now. Now you're sad and you want to beat this bad guy, right? And like, and that's not the effect that actually occurs. It's like, first of all, I don't think we got very attached to any of these particular places. Mm-hmm. We weren't in any of them for very long.
Yeah.
The only time I felt like slightly invested was the reminder that Flame Terminal is Bokemon's hometown.
Yeah, but they kind of like drill that in your head to
now it actually matters. But yeah, like nah, doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, it's not like, yeah, they don't stay in these places long enough for you to develop a fondness for them. And the thing I wrote down my notes was it reminded me of, I realized it's so different from that, which is like a lot of the ways that sitcoms end, and there's a I forget what it's called. There's a, not montage, but a collection of clips of this that you can find on YouTube that is like when sitcoms.
It's called
like
a montage.
Well, no, when you gather a collection of, like a highlight reel of.
A montage.
It's not, anyway. When a bunch of sitcoms ended, they would, the last shot they would show is the empty living room set. You know, like the family or whatever moves away, and so it just shows like the empty living room, and it's like the set you've seen for, you know, 5 to 10 years or whatever, and it like it really effectively evokes that, like, oh, it's so empty now, and it's like this place you've grown super fond of, and you're like, oh, look how far we've come, but also it's really sad that it's over and all this stuff. And like Frontier in comparison is like, yeah, they try to evoke that, like the place you care about, it's more, there are more stakes if it's destroyed, but it's like, we were only there for an episode, and it's like I feel like this could work if it were people's entry to the series. Like, if they did the same kind of thing with the opening locations of Adventure, I think it would work much better there for most people who, like, that was their first thing. But for people who, like, because I think you have a stronger attachment to the thing you first got into, like, the thing you first attached to from Digimon, or from any series, that matter. But these are just, like, places that we, like, were tourists at for, like, half an episode, so... Yeah.
Wasn't even that interesting of a tour. So I wanted to talk about Digimon Frontier's ideas about the closing of the frontier, the idea of the closing of the frontier and the conquering of new ones, which is a very prevalent theme throughout particularly American history. And I will preface this argument with two things. One is, if you think that it's garbage for me to put my American values on this show, I would say that, as I understand history, the only thing that really comes to mind when you say the word frontier is the American frontier.
Well, okay, like, I mean, so I think what's going on here is that, like, the name frontier in Japan too evokes the American frontier. And the thing that cut you off that you're about to mention is this, the thing I looked up was the Japanese Wikipedia article for the word frontier, which is like spelled the same way that Digimon Frontier uses in its title. He's talking about the U.S. frontier. So like, I'm pretty sure, I think it's totally fair. I mean, I'll see your actual argument, but like, I think it's totally fair to view frontier as a Japanese interpretation of the things they've heard about the American frontier. And it's kind of tough for us to like know exactly how that is, like how in Japanese society they hear about the American frontier. You know, like it may be that like it's taught in schools. Like, I mean, we definitely in American schools didn't learn about Japanese history, but I assume it's possible that in Japanese schools they learned about American history, but also probably in a totally different way that we did in America. So I think it's totally fair to look at this as a Japanese interpretation of this American thing. But yeah, like you're saying, I think it's totally bogus to say that you can't view this as related to American things at all, because it totally is.
Well, you could also think of it as maybe American cinema had a very big influence on Japanese cinema, especially Westerns on samurai movies.
Yeah, like Westerns like always engage with the concept of the frontier. And yeah, like you're saying, there's a connection between Westerns and samurai movies. So,
because I mean, they basically have the same plot structure usually. And that's why we have movies like The Seven Samurai and The Magnificent Seven.
Yeah. Sorry, I cut you off.
I would also say that on Lost in Translationmon, you know, the two Australians also made the joke connecting Digimon Frontier to the American frontier. So my understanding is that they also somehow learned about the American frontier. So this must be a thing.
Maybe Oregon Trail's popular.
Oh, Oregon Trail.
I would also say that for me personally, it is the thing that I truly study, not like the American frontier in particular, but
Digimon Frontier is what you study.
Yes,
in
Digimon
college.
Frontier. Pokemon Frontier.
My focus in college was particularly American literature and American studies. I have a double major. And so the way that major. That manifests. Double major.
It's like the dual loading moment in Kingdom Hearts.
Is not like straight history, but like the stories that America likes to tell itself, the myths that America tells itself about its own history is more how I would frame that. And how cool it wants to be in its mind.
Yes.
So I will start it with a brief history lesson of what is the American frontier, because if you've been listening this whole time and you don't know what it is, then it's just confusing. So it's basically, you know, America started off as 13 colonies, but then basically the whole history throughout the 1800s is America getting all of the land that is the continental U.S. And so it's like, oh, crap, we've gone into all these wars with European nations and Mexico and native tribes, and now we've got all this land, like we need people to go settle it or whatever.
And map it out.
And so the way that you do that is, you know, people went through things like the Oregon Trail, but if you played that game, obviously it's like you might die, and like
you will die. You will die of dysentery.
You will die.
Or snake bites.
Exactly. So it's all dangerous.
Fording a river.
I played that game so many times I never knew what fording meant. And I never thought to look it up in a dictionary.
Wow. You didn't like gather it through what happened thing?
Through context clues? No.
Yeah, gosh.
Which version did you play?
Oh, I don't know. It must have been on like Apple IIs or something.
Oh, yeah. So Deluxe.
The computers we had in my like elementary school were Apple IIs, but I'm pretty sure I also had it on my Windows 95 computer at home.
Cool. But then the cooler way to conquer the frontier is to build trains, apparently. Trains. They are absolutely much more efficient. Faster. Well, harder, better, faster. Harder, better, faster, stronger. Yeah.
And then bank robbers.
Yes.
It's kind of conquer the frontier.
It's kind of unfortunate, like, now that you're tying all these elements of the American frontier, like, it's kind of upsetting that we didn't get more explicit Western elements in this season of Digimon. Like, they were in Zero Two, like, the Western episode. But to have, like...
Western
you want
episode.
More of the Western episode?
Yeah, you want to want more of that?
I don't... There's more than one kind of story you can tell, and I don't assume that all Westerns are that bad.
Sure. I mean, I guess, I don't know, whatever. So obviously in Digimon Frontier, trains are a very prevalent thing. I think it's really telling.
Say what?
Even when all of the digital world's land has been taken by the Royal Knights, the train tracks are still there.
cool. And then so the way this goes is that by 1890 or something, they have declared that the American frontier is closed, and it's based on like there are at least two people living per some square mile thing or something like that. And which isn't necessarily a bad thing, except that people took this as a sign of like, no, the American frontier, like conquering it over those 90 something years or whatever, was something that like formed the American race, basically. Like, it's what gave us our individuality and like our love of violence and just like a bunch of characteristics that they're like, okay, but if we don't have a frontier to conquer anymore, like what's going to happen with that? Yeah, like who are we as a people? So then people have tried to redefine what frontiers are. Like, space is the new frontier. This is also shown in Digimon Frontier. They go to the moon. They go to the moon on a train. That's like super embodied.
Well, first they go to the moon by being blasted really hard for some reason.
They're blast off again.
Like, the internet is seen as a new frontier because it's supposed to, you know, theoretically, it's some free, massive world that, like, it can never be truly conquered. It evokes, like, massive communication and, like, all these things. Of course, we know that it's not actually totally free. Like, everybody has money in that game. There's corporations. The government has done crappy things recently to, like, give away your private information to whoever will.
Well, that's always going to be a problem. And that's going to the States now.
Sure. The point is that the frontier has always been an imaginary thing for which you can conquer. And it has never been truly free. And obviously, Digimon Frontier is supposed to be a representation of a digital space. So they are also evoking that as a frontier.
But there really isn't like a, like, taking frontier as a definition of like the boundary between something like conquered and unconquered, and like the contention between that conquered thing expanding into the unconquered thing. Like, Digimon Frontier doesn't actually have that, right? Like,
sure, but I think Digimon Frontier goes beyond. So the way that people have then critiqued the idea of the American frontier is that what it now does for us is that we are very imperialistic in a sense that we like always want to fight totalitarianism. So like it's the justification for doing crappy things like getting involved in a civil war with Syria and stuff, because we like think that's our duty. And I think that, and it's also supposed to be a thing that's like we're very against hierarchy, and I think that the Royal Knights evoke the hierarchy thing. Lusamon evokes the imperialism fight totalitarianism thing.
Somehow.
Maybe not hierarchy, but the Royal Knights definitely evoke like monarchy and
Right. They evoke like some sort of royalty that you are supposed to not agree with because royalty is blah.
I don't want to derail completely, but it's like this concept came to me as you were describing the like it kind of actually seems like, and I hope this isn't like a troubling or problematic connection, but like the way we think and talk about social issues in a way that's like there will always be work to do, like there will always be like a front line of a cause that is like just getting mainstream acceptance but has been, you know, accepted in, you know, smaller communities for a long time, but like there'll always be more to, like, because some people are like, oh, we just gave like marriage right to gay people, like, oh, there's nothing else to do, right? Oh, now there are trans people, like, ugh. And you're like, no, there's always more to do, like, just because you were like ignorant of it before, like, there's always more to improve. And it kind of reminds me of like in that space there is this frontier of social progress, and I don't know if that like that making that analogy like informs or changes how we think about it at all, though. Maybe it's just an empty analogy.
I mean, I feel like the other problematic thing with the frontier is that, like, the original frontier, the problem with it is that everybody thinks that land is open and free, but really it was full of Native Americans that they conquered and put on reservations.
Right, so that was a question I had. Like, you said, like, okay, the definition for when the frontier was closed was when there was two people per...
Natives don't count, come on.
Right, so that's what, like, was that actually, like, that definition, if you included Native Americans, would have actually been like a long time, like always would have been.
Like, yeah. And so, like, yeah. And so I think it's problematic to make that connection only because I think that there's a false sense with social justice issues that's a group gaining a certain civic right somehow impedes other people's abilities to exert their civil rights, which is not true. Like, Whereas with these other Frontier issues, I think there's certainly, like, yes, directly in the American land game, like, somebody gaining that land from somebody else is somebody else getting disenfranchised from that. And so I feel like all of these, given all of these things, seeing this play out in Digimon Frontier, I think it does lend more credence to Jeff's earlier argument about the human savior narrative. Like, I've always agreed that there have been undertones of that.
I found even more undertones this time, like, in this chunk of episodes, too.
Yeah.
Like, right. The talk about, like, this is our home, too, and it's like, can you really say that? Can you?
Right. And it's like, and if you think of it as, like, a forming of an American race, it's like, okay, the kids are supposed to be some high, like, they're half Digimon, half human, but also they send the other human children home, like, you don't belong here because you're not, like, half Digimon, you have no abilities. And, like, in a sense, the human kids know that they don't also truly belong there. They're just kind of like, but I'm a legendary warrior, I have to save you first. And it's sort of like, my take on it is that, like, I find it very interesting that they're not interested in the moon. They're not interested in change. They don't actually seemingly want to find a new frontier. They're like, no, the boundaries should stay what the boundaries were. We need to replace the boundaries, which in a way to me is like an acknowledgement of a globalistic society. Like, okay, we are connected, but also, like, we can stay within our boundaries, and, like, a move towards isolationism. Yeah, that was what I got out of it. I don't know how other people felt. the only other thing that I really thought was interesting was that, like, this digital world does seem to be a good actual balance of what the frontier mythically is, like, this free open society where you can move around and, like, you can all just, like, coexist in the way that there are apparently, like, in-training Digimon that live next to mega-level Digimon and all these things, which is something that we deride as viewers because we're like, but wait, how does the structure of this digital world make any sense? Mm-hmm. But, like, if you think of it as a frontier that's, like, trying to actually be a cool frontier, it's like, okay, I guess that makes sense, but I wish you, so wish you would explore it a little more, but, like, fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was what I had.
It's good. It's good stuff.
I know. I was very excited for this topic. I was like, oh, for once I have something smart to say.
Tell. Nice.
Yeah, the way that they, like, go to the moon, but then, like, still treat, like, but the digital world is, like, different from the moon, but is, like, I don't know. Yeah. I guess I'm like, that's weird from our perspective, because we're like, isn't the moon part of the digital world? From their perspective, like, yeah, the digital world is their home. They should care about their home. They shouldn't want to, like, leave their home and go somewhere else. And, like, these aren't, the characters we see in this world aren't imperialistic or, like, trying to expand the frontier. They're just trying to live.
Yeah.
And I think,
whereas, like, in today's society, we still want to conquer the moon, right? Like, there are people who are like, yeah, I look forward to the future where we can, like, live on Mars and stuff. Like,
but I think as a society, we have collectively not that, like, we've lost our incentive and drive for that. I mean, just in terms of, like, funding and stuff.
Yeah.
But that might not match with societal values. It might just match with Republican policy.
And you still have people like Elon Musk is definitely driving moves towards that still.
Yeah, he drives it in a space car. He's like,
yeah, he drives it in a space car. Thank you. I get it. I know.
I mean, if he can make his Hyperloop in the next year, that'd be great. I want it.
I mean, if he could get me to Los Angeles in an hour, like, I'd be totally down. Unless it costs, like, $1 trillion. Then, you know, I'll wait for it to go down from $1 trillion.
Yeah. The more, like, discussing this topic, like, my personal conclusion is that, like, the choosing of the Frontier title and theme was, like, they wanted to, like, take something, like, take cues from all of this imagery and take cues from Western filmography that they'd seen. And, like, I'm really curious. I mean, if anyone knows anything more about this, I'd be thrilled to hear about it, because it's really hard to find this kind of information online. But, like, because we know about the American myth of the American frontier, which is a very, like, self-fed, like, here's the myth we have about ourselves. And I'm really curious what that is, like, passed down to Japan, especially since, like, through education curriculum, like, I assume a lot of that, like, might be passed down through, like, when the U.S. occupied Japan. And I mean, I'm really curious, like, how much U.S. history is taught in Japan, if any, because I kind of don't expect, there shouldn't really be, like, there's no reason, but it seems unfair to me that, like, we should expect, like, as America had like setting education policies in Japan after World War II to expect Japan to learn about America, but not vice versa seems like pretty gross. So like, I hope it's not even
learn about the crappy things we did to Japanese Americans.
Yeah, in America. Usually. Yeah. Well, no, I mean, we I think in our curriculum, we had teachers who did go out of the way to teach us that, which is cool. But I assume that was like their own prerogative and not the textbooks.
Yeah. So, I don't think it's like totally standard to do that.
Did you guys read Welcome to Manzanar?
No, what's that?
No.
Is that the name of the book?
That is the name of the book, yes.
It's about one of the concentration camps.
Hmm.
Oh, it's Farewell. Wait, did I say Farewell?
You said Welcome.
You said Welcome. But I Googled Welcome to Manzanar and got it, so.
Oops. Well, it's been a decade since I read it.
I actually never read it.
It's a good book.
Mm. So, I mean, yes, I'm certainly curious if other people have other information about what frontier could be referring to in a Japanese context.
I kind of suspect they didn't, like, intend or think too much about the, like, the meaning of frontier as a concept in terms of, like, boundaries and expanding and thinking of, like, you know, the moon as a frontier and the internet as a frontier and stuff. I suspect it's just, like, imagery and concepts pulled from the time period we think of as the American frontier, a.k.a. Westerns.
Well, I don't know. They crammed a lot of imagery in there. Let me tell you.
But with some level of imagery, just kind of like by happenstance, sometimes correlates.
I guess these all seemed fairly purposeful to me, but
no, I don't think it's like. I mean, I think there's a difference between like what I'm talking about is authorial intent, and you're talking about critical reading, and I think critical reading is what matters more. Like what the author's intent doesn't in a lot of ways matter, but I was just speculating what their goal was. What we take away from it matters much more than what their goal was.
Screw their goals.
Welcome to Coastal Clash, our legally distinct from Family Feud game show segment where I guess it's legally distinct from Family Feud Fast Money segment, if you know anything about game shows.
Nope.
It's basically the lightning round for Family Feud, where we have 10 questions about Digimon characters. The first five are about the main cast of Frontier. I actually forgot to put Koichi in it, which I probably should have for this arc.
Perhaps you did.
It's Koichi.
It's the main fight without Koichi. I forgot. Sorry, Koichi. Sorry, bro. You're not real anyway. The second set of questions, second five questions are about the, I have my segment about them is called The Unchosen Children. So that's a good description for them. The four unchosen children, Tepe, Katsuhara, Chiaki, and Teruo. And we're going to, it's East Coast versus West Coast. Ashley's representing the West Coast. Asher's representing the East Coast. And yeah, so we're going to start with Ashley. So Asher, take off your headphones.
Cool beans.
I'm going to lose. Bye-bye. Let's go.
Okay, I'm going to put 60 seconds on the clock. I will pause after when you hit the midway point so you can like switch over and look at the unchosen children and refamiliarize yourself with them.
Yes. Okay.
And this is the image that you have that shows the kids is the same image that the people had when they were choosing. So, oh, and also, I guess I should mention the date. Oh, and I do remember to mention this to Asher. We asked these questions, I mean, you know, when we first tried to record. So, like, time-wise, it was, like, right after Attack on Titan aired that week, I think. Not that that's relevant at all to these questions.
No, okay.
Okay, I'm going to start the clock. Ready?
Yes.
And I'll start the clock once I finish asking the first question. Most likely to be played by a white actor in a mediocre Hollywood live-action adaptation.
Takuya.
Most likely to be gay in a surprisingly decent Hollywood live-action adaptation.
Koji.
Worst at proposing a healthcare reform bill.
JP. That's me.
Most unclosed browser tabs.
Zoe?
Most likely to insist on calling My Hero Academia Boku no Hero Academia.
Oh boy. JP.
Okay, so now we're pausing to just, you can refamiliarize yourself with the unchosen children, Tepe, Katsuhara, Chiaki, and Teruo.
Oh gosh, okay.
I mean, you don't need to pronounce them very well, like I think as long as Andrew understands what you're saying and can write it down.
Okay.
Ready to go? Okay, I'll start again once I finish after reading the first question. Who is the most memorable?
Katsuharu.
Who would be the first to be eaten by a titan in Attack on Titan?
Teruo.
Who would be the first to die unceremoniously in Game of Thrones?
Tepe.
Most likely to have voted for Trump.
Ooh, Tepe.
Most likely to have only been included in Digimon Frontier because they were in some obscure game with a Japanese-only console. For a Japanese-only console.
Chiaki.
I think the way I do it is as long as I was finished asking, as long as I'm in the middle of asking the question, you got it. So you got to answer all of them within.
Yay.
Okay. How do we get Asher back? Slack?
There we go. Can you hear me now? How about now?
Yeah.
Yes.
There we go.
It you.
It me.
Just a reminder that I asked these questions when we first started recording, when we first wanted to record. So I guess it was last week, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just in case there are timely things. So start the timer at the end of the first question, and then I'll pause after five, and then so you can refamiliarize yourself with the unchosen children. Okay. So normal chosen children without Koichi. Most likely to be played by a white actor in the mediocre live action adaptation.
Zoe.
Most likely to be gay in a surprisingly decent Hollywood live-action adaptation.
Huh. Koji.
Worst at proposing a healthcare reform bill.
Junpei.
Most unclosed browser tabs.
Junpei.
Most likely to insist on calling My Hero Academia Boku no Hero Academia.
Koji.
Okay.
That's actually a good answer, damn it.
Is it? What about that is so good?
Because Koji's the one who's all curmudgeonly, like, oh, we were floating around for a half second here, but I'm already bored.
Koji's also the one that's, like, most stereotypically Japanese. Like, he's got the samurai thing going on.
You have 33 seconds left. So, again, it's the four unchosen children.
Yes.
Who is the most memorable?
Tepe.
Who would be the first to be eaten by a titan in Attack on Titan?
Chiaki, because she's a girl.
Who would be the first to die unceremoniously in Game of Thrones?
Teruo, because he's... Who is he?
Most likely to have voted for Trump.
What?
Most likely to have voted for Trump.
Tepe.
Okay, you have infinite time for this one, because I'm already started to ask it when the timer's out. It's the last one. And it's also long, so I can't read it all. Okay. Who would be the most likely to have only been included because they were in some obscure game for a Japanese-only console?
Oh, geez, none of them. But I guess Tepe, because he has the most colors in his outfit.
Wait, is Asher getting points for that last one or no?
Yeah, he is. I just needed to have asked it before. Sorry. I totally forgot. I'm like, why are the numbers so wrong? I totally forgot. A new thing I decided to introduce this time is that the second round would be worth double points because this one is so much harder to guess that they're all so bland.
Yeah.
That choosing between
them. I don't even remember which name goes to who, except for Katsuharu.
I actually knew their names. But you're it was so nice cool. to have them. I'm really not. It's just some of them are names I am fond of, like Tepe and Chiaki.
Chiaki Konaka.
Okay.
Nerd. In Roppa.
Damn. So did Asher destroy me? Is that what happened?
Okay, let's take a look at the scores. Okay. So most likely to be played by a white actor in a mediocre live action Hollywood live action adaptation. Ashley said Takuya and Asher said Zoe. And Takuya was number one, Zoe was number two. Takuya was 45 and Zoe was 36.
People are incorrect.
I mean, I think people chose the main
Takuya's
character.
No, because Takuya's, he's the main character.
Yeah, but Zoe's like, all right, fine, whatever.
No, you weren't supposed to think about it in terms of their gene things going on. You weren't, no.
I did almost say Takuya, but if you were being truthful, they would both be played by white people. and they would get together.
Yep.
Anyway, most likely to be gay. So that, in case you wouldn't notice, the last one was not so subtly jabbing Ghost in the Shell. And the second one was not so subtly jabbing or referencing the Power Rangers movie. Most likely to be gay in a surprisingly decent Hollywood live action adaptation. And you both picked Koji, and that was the number one pick, which I'm surprised by because I thought people would go more for Zoe since it was the what? Female character in Power Rangers.
Don't tell me that. I didn't see it yet.
Oh. See what?
What? Oh.
Power Rangers.
Go watch it.
Sorry.
Don't? I thought no, it was good.
He said go.
Oh, yes.
Sorry. And also, I've heard it's not a big part.
I picked Koji because him and Koichi are so...
You want incest?
Yo, they are super weird, okay?
I had in my notes, like, Crusadermon, is she an incest shipper? And apparently Ashley is too. So
yeah, I mean, I don't ship them.
So is a large part of the fandom.
Okay. Worst at proposing a healthcare reform bill. Like, I'm glad that didn't... Anyway. And you both picked JP, and that was number one with 57%. Most unclosed browser tabs. Ashley picked Zoe, which was only 9.
Is that the one I did really bad on?
I will not understand that.
Asher picked JP with 18. Number one was Takuya.
That makes sense, too.
He's kind of, like, brazenly exploring the frontier of browser tabs.
Well, that, and I was like, oh, he's probably distractible.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
My plan will definitely work.
Yeah.
You can't retreat from a browser tab.
Wait, so was this the one that I did really bad on, or is there one that I got, like, 0 points on?
Yeah, that was
one about 9.
Yeah, that was the lowest.
Okay, cool.
And then for the unchosen children... Oh, sorry, I missed the last one. So for most likely to insist on calling My Hero Academia Boku no Hero Academia, Ashley picked JP for 24, Koji picked Asher, yeah. Asher picked Koji for 36. And that was... Yeah, Koji was number one, and then JP was number two. And then round two for double points. Most memorable, Ashley put Katsuhara, and Asher put Tepe, and I literally can't remember who those two are. But
Katsuhara is the leader, and Tepe is
Katsuharu the bully. Katsuharu is Kazu, Tepe is Tai.
Like, different set of characters, a different set of power dynamics makes it even more confusing.
Actually, I thought that was really clever because they gave Tepe the same voice as Tommy's brother. So you've got these two, you're conflating these two commanding forces in his life. So anyway.
Yeah, so Tepe was number one, and then Katsuhara was number two. I'm surprised people didn't put Chiaki because, like, it's so much easier to remember her being different because she's the one girl.
But she has, like, she no has, lines
yeah,
and no
she
personality.
She does nothing.
That's true.
She's girl.
Yeah.
Girl, hear me, gender. most likely to be eaten by a Titan in Attack on Titan, Ashley put Taro, and these score numbers I'm listing are double. So Taro for 79
right.
And Chiaki for 36.
Asher, girls in Attack on Titan are badass. You get the hell out of here.
Look. No. What I'm saying is the first person we actually, like, saw get eaten by a Titan was Eren's mom. So it's like, if you're a girl who isn't cool and Chiaki isn't cool, like, you're dead. So that was my reasoning.
Why did I pick Teruo? I don't know. He just seemed, like, bland, like...
Yeah.
Like, he's the Armin to...
No. Mikasa. I figured he was the Marco to... I mean, Marco got eaten by Titan.
I don't remember all the people who have been eaten. There have been too many. I don't even remember the people who are alive.
Look, I only saw, like, 9 episodes of this show, so it's easier for me to remember the guys that showed up at first, because I only saw 9 episodes of this show.
Anyway, who would be most likely to die unceremoniously in Game of Thrones? Ashley put Tepe for 73. Ashley put Taro for 55.
Fair enough.
I think those are the number 1 and 2?
Yeah.
And... most likely to have voted for Trump, Ashley put Tepe. You both put Tepe for 69. And
obviously.
That is not number one.
Yeah.
Really? It's not number one.
Is it Katsuharu?
Yeah,
it's Katsuharu. No, but that's wrong.
It is wrong.
That's wrong.
Tepe's the dumb one.
Tepe's the dumb bully one. Oh my goodness. People, what are you doing? You're watching this show wrong.
Yeah. Clearly the character who would vote for Trump is this other character who has 2 lines.
These 2 lines are way more douchey than the other guy's 2 lines.
One of the two lines was, I love Donald Trump so much, I hope he becomes president someday. So I don't know why people missed.
Duh.
And then, not so subtly jabbing at Ryo, who would most likely to have only been included because they were in some obscure game for Japanese only console. I'm surprised we didn't get any, like, hate mail about that question, but... Maybe once it's on the podcast, you will hate us.
I'm sure the people who would have sent us hate mail also never played the games.
Hate is gonna hate.
I don't think so. I think people who really love Rio, I mean, not all of them, but I think some of them will have tried to play English ports and try to get Wonder Swans and stuff. Anyway, Ashley put Shockey English for 73. Sorry, not legal English ports. I mean, like, ROM.
Fan translations.
Yeah, which I'm not sure if they actually are. Maybe they're just, like, scripts that you can follow along with. Anyway, Ashley put Chiaki for 73, and Asher put Tepe for 67. And I think those are the top two. I'm surprised. There's so much consensus. Like,
I'm surprised Chiaki. I really did not think that she would be that high. I thought that would be the question that I messed up really badly.
It just... Yeah, I don't know why people... Like, there seemed to be so much more consensus for these guys than I expected. That's why I doubled the points, because I figured they'd be, like... They'd all be, like, basically 25, 25, 25. Mm. But they weren't. And anyway, so final score, Ashley had 532 and Asher had 490. So Ashley won.
You killed me.
Whoa, look at that. Oh, burn.
Royal Knights?
Yeah, so I thought it'd be a good time to... I mean, as we go through more of the Digimon franchise, we're going to encounter these guys more and more. And this is really the, like... The first time they appeared to us in our podcast coverage. I mean, not in our... We've seen plenty of stuff with them before. And I thought it was worth looking back at the history of, like, how and when they came to be. Because this is really the first big appearance of them in the Digimon franchise. And as people who have played... I don't think it's too much of a spoiler. I mean, I think people talk about the Royal Knights so much. Like, if you really don't want to know which series they appear in, and you consider that a spoiler because you haven't seen a bunch of Digimon properties, skip ahead a minute, and I won't keep as long in a minute. But they appear in Digimon Savers, Digimon X Evolution the movie, Cyber Sleuth. There's a manga or two.
Technically, they appear in all the seasons, just as the group.
So members of the Royal Knights in what you consider, but the Royal Knights as an actual concept that is addressed by the narrative appears in only those. But it's a lot of them, and it's kind of like the most frequently used concept in Digimon these days. So. It's kind of weird to the back at this point where we're like, whoa, Royal Knights was a new concept. So it's kind of hard because you can, looking back at the history, you can find mention on the two different Digimon wikis about the Royal Knights and how they're using the fictional properties. But what I was really curious about was like when Royal Knights as a concept really started to appear in the franchise. And that's harder to look up in history, but I opened a thread on With the Wheel asking people who were around in the fandom back then to recall. And it seems to me that this is really... There were mentions on character profiles and I think cards before this premiered in Frontier, like the Dukemon profile from Tamers mentioned that he was a member of the Royal Knights. And so like that was, I think both in the card game and the like anime profile mentioned that. So people were like, okay, I guess Royal Knights is a group in Digimon, but like, okay, I don't know if we're actually going to ever see it. But I think there was some, like from some members of the fandom, they kind of thought it would be like, okay, this seems to be a new thing. It's like hyped up. And like, the thing is that a lot of the members were previous season Gogglehead, like Maximum Levels, like Omegamon, what are the other ones?
Well,
Gallamon / Dukemon.
Imperial Dramon Paladin Mode was the founder, but he's not a Royal Knight.
So I think that was mentioned in the character. So like there were like since the characters that were listed as members were so high profile, they kind of expected, okay, maybe they're going to make an appearance in something maybe someday. So then when they appeared in Frontier as these two new designs that were like also villains, because they've, you know, been linked to protagonists before, and to just be like, and they're super villainous and they're not what you expect at all, was I think a surprising moment for the fandom. And there's apparently this is a weird thing to look back on, but like people expected Rapidmon armor mode, and not armor mode, the armor evolution of Rapidmon that was golden to be one of them because of their classification in the Digimon hierarchy, but that never came to be.
And also Magnemon would have been a good like
Magnemon was listed as one too. Anyway, people were caught off guard, and this is really, it's weird to look back on this point and be like, this is how they were kind of, because I look back on it now and I'm like, this is kind of a teaser for them to introduce Royal Knights as a more fleshed out concept, to actually have the whole team, to have them be more prominent in the plot and everything. But the next property where they actually appear was several years later. Like, I forget the dates exactly, but X Evolution was the...
2007. X Evolution? 2006, that was like 2004.
I'm not, right? I think maybe 2005. Anyway, it was a couple years later at least, and that movie prominently features them. But it definitely wasn't like a... I think after Frontier, the franchise was doing poorly enough. They were like, okay, let's rethink things. They weren't like, okay, and now we're going to totally jump into this Royal Knights thing. Anyway, that's kind of our introduction to the Royal Knights. But the main thing that's like relevant to these episodes, I want to talk about them. And because as we talked about before, there's not really much interesting to them. They're kind of bland, and there's not really much like intrigue going on. We get a little bit of Dynasmon being like having such rage that it even terrifies Crusadermon, which is kind of a neat concept that doesn't really go anywhere. We don't get any backstory from them. The concept of the Royal Knights existing in this universe never makes any sense. Like, it just is pulled out of a hat. Like, it doesn't tie into any of the other Digimon world lore in this universe.
Everything about them is just completely vague.
Right, completely vague, pulled out of a hat. The fact that they allude to it being a, like, they don't say how many members are or whatever, but, like, they don't make it seem, they make it pretty ambiguous whether it's just these two or their other members. So it's all weird and poorly handled on a story level. But the, I think, most interesting aspect of it, from our perspective, too, is how Crusadermon, I'm wondering if everyone, like, Ashley and Asher, if you guys know about this, about, like, what
I mean, is, you told me.
Oh, I told you, I did tell you. How Crusadermon is not female in Japanese.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, you watched the Japanese version, of course, you know.
I watched the Japanese version, yes.
And so, I mean, Crusadermon is the dub name, and the original Japanese name is Lord Nightmon.
Lord Nightmon.
Which...
So okay. Original.
Has been...
But it does make sense with the different Nightmon that appear in that one episode.
Oh.
Mm. Oh, I think the other... Back in the day, the other way Lord Nightmon's name got written down was Rodo Nightmon.
Right.
And where R-H-O-D-O refers to the fact that he is pink.
I saw it's in the character profile.
Yeah.
It mentioned that it was like related to Rodo Knight, which I'm like, what even is that?
I don't know what that is. if that's a thing, I don't know what that is, but I assumed that Rodo was related to pink.
Are rhododendrons pink?
What?
Rhododendron.
Oh, the flower.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Rhododendrons?
I mean, look up rhodonite, because I can't tell what color that is.
Rhododendrons are pink. They are the kind of pink that Lord Nightmon is.
And I guess Lord Nightmon has flowers, so.
Yes.
Yeah, and the thing is that, like, I think that inconsistent transliteration, or whatever, translation of the name has persisted. I'm pretty sure in Cyber Sleuth they say Crusadermon, I think.
Yeah, they say Crusadermon.
But I've definitely also seen like Load Nightmon, because it's like loading data.
That's
not acceptable. Boo.
Yeah, so let me actually confirm that. Well, I don't know how to confirm that, because I think it was in like spottier translations. But the weird angle that I find about the change of gender is how often when we're talking about gender of Digimon, we talk about it like it's okay. This character might not even have a line, but we're like, they're clearly coded as this one gender based on their appearance and everything. And for this to be like, if you just watch the dub, I think you would have the same impression. You'd be like, they are clearly coded as female, but all of that coding, all of that like visual imagery, directing choices, all the flowers and everything, like all that stuff exists in the Japanese version where they're not female. So
then we start getting into the question of different kinds of masculinities across cultures. I don't necessarily read Crusadermon / Lord Nightmon as female, probably because I saw this in Japanese the first time. And so like my brain is all like, oh, that was a dude. but you see this character type in other shows, even from earlier. Yu Yu Hakusho, for example, you've got Kurama.
I totally thought Kurama was a girl.
So did the Philippines. In the Philippines dub, his name is Denise, and he's a chick. Until they realized their mistake, I assume. I don't know. He has shirtless scenes.
You gonna mention the Sailor Moon guy?
Which one?
I could mention the Zoisite.
Oh, I thought you were gonna talk about Fisheye.
We're not there yet, man. Zoisite was male in Japan, and also gay, like, canonically, like, and in the English dub was turned to a chick. But I wasn't going to bring that one up because it's the exact same example. But even Tuxedo Mask, he goes around with a rose in his hand all the time. Say,
I would think of it more as like in shoujo manga, dudes are always shown being like silly. I don't know. I guess I'm thinking of like Oran in particular, like Tamaki and stuff.
Yeah. It's not the silliness. It's the holding flowers, the being associated with flowery imagery.
Yeah. So like, yeah,
totally a thing in girly manga.
And for dudes. It's not necessarily emasculating. Is what I'm getting at. Like, there's a romantic trope to it. And all of Crusader Mon's lines in the dub, anyway, because I do not remember what he was about in the Japanese version. I was 12.
Also, that was like 15 years ago.
Yeah, it was 15 years ago. Don't talk. Is all his things are about beauty and the strength there is to be found in elegance, which is not necessary. See, I'm mixing it up now. I meant Crusader Mon, who's apparently female, but it's just a different kind of strength, I think. And strength is always masculine, don't you know?
On one hand, I think Jeff's reading of it being changed was that they were afraid of showing perhaps queerness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Which and then, is I wonder if that's like... But I also appreciate it being turned to a female since there are so few female Digimon.
And there are also, there's a lack of intimidating female Digimon. Like,
yeah,
I actually appreciate this change at the same time as I'm like, you didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like, there are frustrating aspects of it. And good
aspects. Why not both? Why can't you give me both?
Why couldn't they make a Dynasmon also a girl?
Like, well, okay.
That would be interesting.
Awesome.
I think another frustrating angle of it that can be separated from those other angles that we appreciate is the name change. That like,
oh yeah, I have issues with that.
So I mean, it's unclear. Like, you know, I feel a little awkward like inferring intent, because a lot of people infer intent in these name changes, and like the most we can do is like speculate about what people who were behind these decisions could dislike about a name, and that could trigger them to look for a new name. Like, that's the most we can ever really do is speculate. And it seems like maybe the thing they wanted to avoid was having a female character called Lord Nightmon, which if that was the reason, that's super gross. And
yeah,
like, I mean, I guess that is one instance where you could, like, I guess refer back to like European medieval fiction and say in a bunch of this fiction knights could not be female, so no. But like, there's no reason in the digital world BS lore that you couldn't just be like, no, here knights can be female, like whatever.
I think the issue is the lord part.
Yeah, I think actually the issue would be the lord part, and I want them to change it to Lady Nightmon. Like, I don't know, I don't think I don't really feel that, like, Crusadermon at least is somewhat of a gender neutral name that I'm kind of like, that's fine.
Sure.
Yeah, I forgot that Lord is totally gendered thing.
Yeah. Sure, Crusader isn't problematic in the gender framework, but it's very problematic from a anyone who is not Christian framework.
Hey, what you talking about?
but also like they are a bad person. They are a bad guy, bad girl, whatever. And so like
bad girls. Yeah.
So I don't think it's inherently problematic to like harken back to problematic imagery.
I think it is because the royal knights are not always bad and are supposed to be good, actually. Like, they say, even in this first introduction we have to them, like, you guys are supposed to be cool and you're not. So I don't take this problem away from me, Jeff.
But are they ever fully good in Digimon?
They're usually
never are, but like, they're not. They're supposed to be cool.
They're almost always like good intentions that manifest in ways that make them things evil. They need to fight. Like, not necessarily evil, but just like, we need to fight you. And they I guess they have varying degrees of misguidedness. Here they're just like totally corrupt and just like, yes, we want to control the digital world. Like that's, I think this is the most extreme they ever are.
They want to invade the human world too, right? Wasn't that a stated goal?
Right.
Yes, they do. Which is pretty problematic from a crusader.
Steve? No, it's perfectly fitting, right?
Right. It's like, on the one hand, it's problematic, but it's also like, I could see why they choose the name for that, because like kind of what she wants to do is crusade.
Yeah, isn't it? No, like,
it's actually slightly different. Crusade is like, the word comes from cross, referring to Christianity. So like, it's...
She has a cross.
It's not just conquering, it's conquering and forcing conversion.
Right.
I mean, but the definition of crusader, just in a dictionary sense, is a person who campaigns vigorously for political, social, or religious change, a campaigner.
I think that's what it means now, but I'm pretty sure that's not what it originally meant. I think it was specifically referring to the Crusades.
Right.
Sure.
And I think there's... I guess there, so looking at the like the changing because if they didn't change it, it would seem gay angle. I think there are two different ways to interpret like the I'm not thinking of optimism, but like when you trust someone, like a
trust.
Yeah, what?
What is the? I think there's a word, and I can't think of it. Like the optimistic goodwill? Way to interpret that is that like
good faith.
Yeah. Anyway, the optimistic way to interpret that is that they were like, which is still not great, but at least somewhat more optimistic that they were like. Kids will be confused and they'll find it jarring. And the more pessimistic one is like, no, gross, kids will like dislike, will like, we can't have that in our media, like, we'll corrupt them. Both those are bad, but like, also the whole concept, like, was that a reason? I don't know. It's, we're all like guessing at intent, but I'm trying to think of any other like compelling reasons to guess at for why they like to speculate why they would have changed the gender, because that is like
but it fits with the theme of what they changed in anime in the late 90s and early 2000s, like people in CCS could not be in any way seemingly queer, stuff like that.
Which must have been quite the challenge.
Challenge accepted.
There are so many things that I, like, didn't actually watch that version of that I still, like, got that message somehow. I mean, the two examples I'm thinking of are, like, until I was 16, like, the only version of CCS I had seen was Cardcaptors. But, like, this idea that Sharon had a crush on Yuki is, like, firmly cemented in my head. Like, I thought that was an impression I got back then from just watching Cardcaptors.
I mean, I think it's really hard to edit that out.
Yeah, like, Cardcaptors is, like, unbelievably gay. So, like...
Yeah. I think they did a more successful job of making the brother and Yue not seem gay.
Wait, Ash, when you said Cardcaptors is super gay, did you mean Cardcaptors or Cardcaptor Sakura?
Both. A lot of it is in body language and not in script, and you can't edit body language out of an anime.
Yes, you can. Just, like, tilt their bodies back.
You delete the scene, sure.
I mean, they probably...
Yeah, they deleted a lot.
They delete a lot of scenes, but there's a lot that they couldn't delete because they were plot relevant.
Right, exactly. That's why it's like, Jeff, that's probably why you... Just put it.
That's fair. But the other one is, like, I'd only seen...
Tamoyo had a huge crush on Sakura. Like, that didn't
go away.
And then we had awkward cousins.
Yeah, the other thing is that, like, actually, they really are cousins. But the other thing is that, like, at the time Cardcaptors was on TV, the manga was also available. And did you, like, ever look at it? Because the manga didn't pull its punches.
I did not. Manga's for nerds.
Ah.
Jeff doesn't do manga.
Sailor Moon was also like that.
I mean, I definitely didn't do manga. I definitely did not know or like engage with manga at all in sixth grade. I think basically Ashley introduced me to it in ninth grade.
Yes. And then in Sailor Moon, they made the lesbians cousins, and it was so obvious.
That's one of those, like, that's like a risky bet where it's like, this could make it, or it could make it even worse once it becomes more explicit.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It did not work.
The other example I was thinking of was, like, Delando. I had only seen the Escafone movie, Delando's gender is never a thing that comes up. But I, like, when Ash and I watched the series the first time,
Delando
I was like...
Delando was a girl?
Wait, what?
What? Wait, what are you saying? Did you think he was a girl?
Like when we started watching series, I was like, yeah, I know this happens, but I was like, how did I know this happens? I think it's just that like you told me it happened, and then that was enough information for me to like meld it into my experience of watching the movie, and like I can see how that fits, kind of. Like, I don't know.
Okay. I mean, Escaflowne is certainly another. I mean, they stopped airing it after a certain point where I think they finally watched that far ahead and were like, oh no.
Yeah, this is totally not appropriate.
Yeah, this is so inappropriate.
Like, it has a lot of stuff that I think they didn't want showing to the age group they were marketing.
Yeah. That being one of
them.
Cool
robots and mystical stuff.
But it's also a thing where they tried to like make Hitomi not the main character, like they just cut out the episode. Yeah.
Oh, they did the same thing to Cardcaptors. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Was it the same people working on it?
No, it was different.
Nirvana? Was it Nirvana?
They were on different networks anyway.
It couldn't be.
Yeah, it was different networks.
Cardcaptors was WB and Escaflowne was Fox.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to
Bandai Entertainment.
It was Bandai Entertainment.
Unchosen Children.
Unchosen Children need to get the heck out of the digital world.
Okay.
Okay, so my first question with Unchosen Children is, like, the first thing it immediately calls to mind for me, I know I'm, like, biased towards always making references to this, but, like, they are, like, completely the tailies from Lost, where people haven't seen Lost. Like, when the plane crashes in Lost, the plane splits, and the tail section of the plane lands somewhere else on the island, and midway through the second season, they reunite with the survivors from the other side of the island. But like, it's only like a small section that survived up until that point. And yeah. Is this like a common concept? Like, when I say, oh, this is like Lost, are you like, oh, but there are lots of things that do this concept too, of you follow a main cast and they're like, oh, a bunch of people also have been doing the same thing alongside of you. Does it remind anyone else of anything else?
Yes.
Nope. No.
Yes?
Sure. Not that exactly, but there are always people who are left out, people who are less important. Like in any sports manga, there's like the core characters that are in every episode, and then there's like those other schmucks that are on the team, like whatever.
Okay, I guess so. That's
them bench warmers.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think of another. I think this does happen in other. Like, things closer to this happen in other stories. I just can't think of any off the top of my head.
I can think. I got one.
Have we heard of it?
Is it wrong to pick up girls in the dungeon? Shit, what's it called?
I don't know. I know what you're referring to. Danmachi, yeah.
But basically, there's like a ton of, like, there's familias, which are basically like guilds. And the main series focuses on Hestia's guild, which includes the main character and a few other people. But then there's the Loki familia, and we get to see some of them in the main series. But then, like, towards the end of the series, we finally get to meet the other ones who aren't as important to the plot. And then in the spin-off anime, based on the spin-off novel series / manga or whatever, they decide that they're going to cover what those people were doing during the main plot.
Hmm.
That's cute. Actually, yeah, so, doesn't One Piece do this, like, all the time?
I mean, the aspect that I'm thinking of is, like, you know, like, going on an adventure and then being like, oh, these other people were there too, and, like, let's kind of, like, catch up with them and see what they did while, like, they were just kind of just like us, but they got thrown in at a different point. And One Piece is just like, oh, they split up because they had to split up.
No, I'm thinking, like, other pirates are out there doing the same thing, and sometimes we run into them.
Like Shanks?
Not like Shanks. More like those other, the other guys that, the other generation. New kids with, yeah.
Like who?
The other newbie pirates who are like
Law Kid, Dragon Dude. Not Dragon, yeah. Dinosaur Dude, Castle Dude.
I have no clue who you're talking about, but I recognize the name Law.
Yes. Law is good.
Dare I say Sword Art Online?
Okay, I think we're going too far from this initial. All these examples have been like pretty, except for the Danmachi one, which is pretty similar. I think we're kind of. I don't think it's that common of a thing. And anyway,
because that takes too much effort.
So, but that was kind of the digression from my main talking points, which were a couple different ways of like looking at the interactions we have with the unchosen children in this arc. It's really just the two episodes with him. But and one angle or one lens of looking at it is how it approaches humanizing bullies, since they're people who don't remember the episodes or beginning of the series. The two of the kids, the two of the four they meet. I skipped over the part that the most frustrating is their voices, which we've alluded to before, but Katsuhara is Kazu, Tepe is Tai, Chiaki is Yoli / Riley / Bioman, and Teruro is Davis. So, yeah.
You didn't hear it?
I don't remember him speaking, basically.
Yeah, he only has a couple lines.
All four of them were somebody, but I couldn't remember who he was.
It was frustrating because it was like, okay, in my mind, I was like, he's the one that doesn't have a distinctive voice. And then he started talking. I was like, oh no, you're another one. Like, I also in my mind don't, when actual Tai, Kazu, and Davis aren't on screen, it's harder for me. All I was you are one of them. You are as soon as Teru started talking, I thought he was actually the same voice as Tepe or Katsuhara. But then I had to look it up and no, that's actually a different voice actor. It's just they all kind of, when the original characters aren't on screen, they all in the same bucket in my head of past bros, digi bros. Katsuhara is the one that's kind of is he officially the leader?
Yeah.
Okay. Cause Katsuhara and Tepe are the two that bullied Tommy and pushed him onto the train.
Which we see all the time.
Yeah. It's a fun flashback. And Chiaki's the girl, and Taro is the other one, I guess.
Yeah, that's actually who he is.
In terms of humanizing bullies, I feel like I'm mainly talking about the first episode for most of these talking points, actually, because the second episode, they're kind of just there. But in the first episode, really, I feel like what it was trying to do was humanize bullies. And I really did not think it did a great job of that. You're kind of supposed to get that arc.
They were hypocrites.
I guess they were hypocrites. I mean, the turning point was just, Tommy jumping to save, I can't remember, Tepe? No, Katsuhara?
Yeah, it was Tepe.
Jumping to save Tepe. All that's showing is this person who is mean to me, their life is in danger, I won't let them die. You know, it's not really an act of forgiveness or anything. It's just, I guess it's their reaction to that kind of humanizes them. Maybe?
No. I think that doesn't even humanize. I mean, it doesn't make them less bullies in my mind. We've changed our mind about Tommy because Tommy showed that he's not a little pansy piece of crap like we thought he was.
But we still believe in the idea of pansy pieces of crap.
Yeah, but we still believe in the idea of pansy little pieces of crap. It's I have been shown to be that thing. So maybe I should work on that, but I'm still going to go bully people probably.
I think
that's shown in the way that they talk to the Digimon. They're like, rah, 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 you're just big bullies. Rah, you're pieces of junk.
Yeah. But even if it wasn't effective, humanizing them by putting them in danger is the cheapest way to.
Totally.
Yeah. To try to humanize. And I guess what it's trying to go for is have Tommy, who feels so insecure compared to them, feels lower than them, to have a moment where he can shine and be better than them at something and blow them away, and they'll be really impressed by him. And I guess I just find that a troubling or problematic or troublesome metaphor for, or an analogy when you apply it to bullying, because I feel like it's kind of a critical misunderstanding of how bullying works, because I feel like bullying usually happens because the bully is jealous of the bullied person for some reason or other. So this idea that surprise them and blow them away with something that they'll respect you for, I feel like bullies always have something that they deep down respect the bullied person for, but they're jealous of and angry about, I guess the stereotype is a bully is not doing good at schoolwork and not doing good at math, but then they beat up the kid who's good at math because they're I wish I was as good as you at math. Deep down, maybe that's just another stereotype that I'm feeding into.
Yes.
I was going to argue against it, but then I realized that the real world example I was going to give
was yourself?
More complicated. Not myself. It was
it's yourself being the bully, by the way. That's what I'm not jokingly being haha, Ashley was bullied. Haha.
Yes, I got it.
Yeah, but the listeners don't.
No, the example that I was thinking of was there was this girl at the camp that I was counselor for who was severely bullied by a group of girls that she kept trying to get in with and play with. And we would be really, you should just avoid them. There are plenty of other people who would want to play with you and stuff.
And like this, the girl who was trying to get in with them and was bullied was very awkward socially and only really got along with kids who were younger than her. And so like, I don't think that the girls that were bullying her necessarily were jealous of her in any way. But then I remembered that at least one of them had what seemed like a fairly abusive mother in a way. So like, I guess there's just like, but that's like a general jealousy of anybody who like has a normal life, you know, not like of the specific person.
Yeah. Like, I think it's bullying. I wouldn't say it's, it always stems out of jealousy targeting a particular victim, but it's trying to prove power that they don't normally feel they have.
Right.
Yeah, it's not always targeted to
And it normally manifests in people that you just perceive are weaker than you in some other critical way.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess I want to like end the discussion of bullying by just saying, like, if you want a story that actually like engages with the concept of bullying on a like, well, actually engages with it head on and does it, handles it really well, you should read the manga A Silent Voice, or I guess the movie is maybe coming out in some form in English some point soonish.
Hopefully. But, it's on Crunchyroll.
But I'm talking about the movie. The manga's on Crunchyroll.
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah, but it was, yeah. Movie, from Ashley and I's perspective, was not as good, but we also watched in Japanese, so we didn't really understand what they were saying. But anyway, it is a really good story, and it
Well, Jeff thinks that the manga doesn't do anything special for manga, but I actually think it does.
Maybe, kind of, a little bit.
It uses the form of manga in a good way.
Yeah. But also, okay, so a couple other angles of the Unchosen Children. There's so much condescension from the main kids of them staying in the digital world. But I kind of like the argument between Takuya and everyone else where like, he was like, you guys can't stay here. And they're like, Takuya, you're being so hypocritical. This is exactly what you would do. And,
and I like, do you know about reverse psychology? God.
But I liked how Angemon referred to the kids who went home as being brave for swallowing their pride. Like that was I mean, it's a nice reversal of what you expect. And it's like, kind of exactly the lesson Takuya should learn. It felt like he did learn before. There was that whole, like, when we were talking about this Kakemon arc, we were like, oh, or at least I was like, this like feels like a cohesive character arc for Takuya, because in the beginning he doesn't want to run away from Duskmon, and at the end he runs away from Kakemon. He really learned. But then in this arc, later, in episode 43 I wrote down, they're talking about like, have, it's like when they're having their one of their moments of like, oh, I guess we can't win. And Bokemon says, Takuya was right. Running is never the answer. We have to stay here and fight. And it's like, no. I feel like
it's never the answer, Jeffrey.
My suspicion from these dub lines is that the Japanese script is a little bit more nuanced and like is able to juggle this nuance a little bit better, or maybe significantly better. But the dub script, like when it is being written, just like throws in things like that. Like, running is never the answer. And it's like, okay, but like this character said it was 20 episodes ago, and like they haven't, it's not like their character arc was to learn that you should never run away. Like, so I think it's just, yeah, the general, dub writing process kind of inevitably loses that nuanced handling of things. And also a lot of condescension towards these kids staying because they were bored, which is exactly the reason most of the main kids stayed. Like, I mean, I think it's both, like in some of the early episodes, they talk about why they didn't leave when they had that option with the like second time they went back to the station or whatever, when they went back to the station, and they chose to stay because they were bored. And like, well, I mean, Tommy had a weird reason, right? He was like, I want to prove that I'm strong so my parents will respect me or something.
Takuya's reason?
No, Tommy.
I don't think so. Oh, no. Maybe his brother.
It was something about his parents, though. I remember. I thought.
I don't remember.
It didn't make sense at the time. But anyway, it's like them staying because they're bored is very similar to the main kids, and to look down on them on it as well is like super uncomfortable, because it's like the reasons you are giving is so nearly identical, and it's just that the main kids were chosen by some supernatural force to be the main characters, and that's why it's okay for them and not okay for you guys. And it's like, but your reasoning is the same, so like if it's okay for one of you, it should be okay for the other. And they kind of say that, but then the kids by the end are like, oh, it's dangerous, so I guess we will go home and whatever.
I mean, I agree that the, I don't know, it's like the initial reason for all of them to be there was that they were bored and they were intrigued by this random text message that doesn't make any sense, because as a cynical teenager you'd just be like, what is this garbage, screw off.
Not even teenagers.
Whatever. But I feel like we
aren't given enough insight into what traveling around the digital world has been like for the Unchosen Children following Angemon to know, like, what attachment that they have gained to it.
Mm. I guess I just realized that they're basically Angemon groupies.
Yes.
Yeah, because they could have developed similar attachment to the digital world. And I guess, like, it was kind of forgetting that there was that the pivotal moment when I guess they decided it wasn't just about staying because they're bored was when they met Serafimon and said, and were told to leave. And they're like, no, we're not leaving because we have this burden we want to bear. And I guess maybe what this kind of like show implicitly encouraging the main characters and discouraging the other characters is kind of arguing that like the other kids should have left at that point when they were like, okay, that there's no more need for kids for then like it's getting really dangerous. And I don't know, maybe it's also, I mean, this is like a meta level, but it's weird how the show and the characters look down on the kids for fighting with Angemon as like, it really seems like it's framed in a way that's like, you're not actually fighting. Like, you say you're fighting, but you're just letting Angemon fight for you. But that's like,
it's hypocritical to other seasons, how the
Yeah, it's
are.
How it works in season 1 through 3. So it's a little bit, I mean, okay, they're like, you can point out differences. Like, they have Digivices, they are linked. The kid's power is necessary to Digivolve. And like, you can write away all these things, but the core concept of like, the kid cheerleads while the Digimon fights is the thing that upset them here. And they were found so like, it seems am I alone in like thinking that it came off as being like they are like leeching off of him and manipulating him or something? Like, it seems,
I mean, that's
sinister.
Why I'm saying it wasn't like, I don't feel like I was given enough information about what their time has been actually like, because obviously it just changes as soon as they meet the other kids. They're like, oh, you've been here too, like, let me just go bully you some more or whatever. And it's just like, how has Angemon been treating them? Because I mean, at the end of this, he's like, yeah, you should go home, right? But like, this whole time has he been like, yeah, we're having fun, like, you
No, I don't think he told him to go home. I think it's just the kids. They Katsuhara decides. He just like kind of spur the moment's like, it was dangerous, so I guess we'll go home. And the other kids are like, what? And then he's like, and they all nod and they're like, okay. It's like, what? That was all you needed to.
Well, regardless, I don't feel like I gained enough about their attachment to Angemon or how Angemon felt about it or any other attachments that they were able to make to villagers and such. Like, I don't know.
Do you feel like the show is, because my point is kind of like, I feel like the show is trying to tell us that the way they handle fighting with Angemon is leeching off of him. Do you feel like, even if you haven't seen enough to like judge well for yourself, do you think it's pointing that direction?
I guess, but I still feel like my opinion would hinge on how Angemon felt about this relationship.
Well, it doesn't really matter much because Angemon dies and they don't even like mention it again for an episode.
Cool.
So.
Whatevs, yeah.
Did they even notice?
Who?
Exactly.
Ange what?
So we got a Patreon topic from Mega Level Patchmon?
Yes.
Yeah. You only need to be ultimate level, but he happens to be Mega Level. Patchmon Marcus. And first question. So the first two are about the unified spirit forms. And the first one, do we like the new super mega forms? And do you think it's practical for everyone to give up spirits to make them?
No, it sucks.
Well, I mean, I would argue, I mean, practical is a kind of strange way of looking at it, but
yeah.
Is it practical? Maybe. But like, is it good for the show? Practical for like the show? No. And
I like the forms, like aesthetically, I think they're some of the better designs in this show. But also like, no, it's obnoxious.
Are they so much better that it's worth sacrificing everyone else to not appear?
No. No. What would be cool is if everybody got one. But
yes. Yeah.
I mean, so to lead on, to go into that, the second question was, if we had to pick, I'm afraid I should have just, I changed the pronouns to be like our discussion topics, but anyway. So if we had to pick, if we had a choice to pick the other kids to receive the super mega form, who would they be and why? And Marcus said they would pick Zoe and Koichi.
I don't think it's fair unless all of them get it.
So I actually, I mean, I had never considered it before, this question, but like, what I think would be so much cooler is, because I mean, the whole point of the unified spirits, whatever, is that like, they, you know, combine 5, I guess it's 10, because there are 20 spirits total, right?
Yes.
There are 10 in each Emperor-gram and a Magna-gurumon. What I think would be cool, still keep it so that like, okay, you need 10 spirits in order to form one of these guys, but like, they can be swapped around, so like, you know, put 10 spirits into fire, and you get Emperor Greymon. Put 10 spirits into darkness, and you get some cool Koichi form.
That would be cool.
And then so like only two of them ever fighting at once, but they swap around based on the circumstances.
And that would actually be really cool.
Yeah.
Damn that's it. What we wanted out of the Digimentals, and we never got it.
Yeah, that's true.
But this wouldn't even have to be like that. Like, I can see how the Digimentals and the Digi-Eggs are, like, it's kind of a, like, inevitable pit of, I forget how many combinations it opens up, but you have 6 kids and 8 Digimentals. That's...
9.
48, 9?
Oh, yeah. If you count kindness.
So, 36 different combinations. Like, I could see, like, ugh.
Wait,
I didn't do that right.
8.
54. 54 combinations. Like, once you introduce 54 combinations, like, we can't show all of them. That would be, like, it's not, like, I guess if you had, like, 2 per episode, you could fit them in, but...
But my
proposal for how to do the Unify ones, it still would just be 1 per character. So that would have been...
Right.
Yeah.
But...
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Someone designed those for us. Do it.
Yeah, do it.
Oh, that'd be so cool. Do it.
Somebody who can draw, definitely not me.
And the final question from Marcus was about the Royal Knights. So they said, so this question. So Lusamon can call upon 2 of the Royal Knights to help in his aid. So why can't our heroes call upon other Royal Knights to help them?
Well, that's what I asked, right? Like, where's the Gallantmon, man? Like, what's
Because they don't know about it. They don't have a pre-existing connection to this world, really.
Ash, rewrite the world.
Yeah.
Well, if I rewrote the world, we wouldn't have this problem in the first place. I think I would have, like, just ended it at Cherubimon. We wouldn't have...
I mean, okay. Even if the kids can't summon the Royal Knights, though, it doesn't make sense why... Like, seriously, where is Gallantmon? Like, what is he doing? Did he die? Like, it doesn't, like, why is he not trying?
It does seem frustrating now, and I think, even just looking at the text of the episode, like, as soon as they're like, Lusamon summoned the Royal Knights, they were supposed to be good, but these guys are bad. Like, given that little bare bit of information they got, shouldn't they have asked, wait, sir, there are others? And they're good? Where are they? Can we find them?
Can
they help us? Like, those questions never come up. It's just like it's almost like in the canon of Digimon Frontier, these are treated as the only Royal Knights, which, like, I guess is possible, but, like, it'd be such a weird thing to call them, like, the Royal Knights when it's just two people.
I mean, that's enough to have plural knights.
I suppose. So we wanted to take some time to thank a listener for leaving an iTunes review. This one was from Doa Radwan in the USA. Ash, can you read the review?
No. Title, A Digimon Podcast. Heart. I am very happy to find a podcast about my fave anime. I feel very happy listening to you. You provide a lot of opinions, which is very interesting, and a very exciting discussions about the series, especially Try. I am very happy to know about you. But sometimes I feel that it's a little long, but that's all. Keep the great work up. And I would like to point out that each of these sentences ends with a dot dot, like two periods instead of one.
I mean, 2 periods are serious. Also, we also feel that it's a little bit long.
Yes, it's true. I'm a little hungry. And by a little, I mean a lot.
Wait, you didn't eat before?
No.
Oh.
It was early.
Sorry, I guess I just assumed you guys would have eaten before.
You ate during?
Yeah, didn't you hear me?
No. I mean, I'm sure I'll hear it in the recording.
Sure.
Oops.
Anyway, like, and then yes, a fun thing we do to the iTunes review to show thanks, although it's a weird form of showing thanks, make it more entertaining. We put it through... Google Translate over and over. I think it's time I actually use Bing Translate.
Wow.
Through several different languages until it becomes completely mangled. So here is the review now.
Title, Energy Podcast Digimon 3. I'm glad to find the soul of my favorite podcast, like a Denmark from England, a new hearing. Very interesting and very interesting debate. Particularly
interesting is our favorite word.
You know that I am happy, but sometimes it falls for a long time. But all the value of a contract.
The value of a contract.
The contract. Is it
worth like that?
Oh, no, I did it again.
My soul led to the darkness.
Now I've lost it. I know I can kill.
The truth exists beyond the gates.
Ba-na-da-na.
What are we saying?
Energy Podcast Digimon World 3.
Well, or 2003 in Europe.
Well, that was the Full Metal Alchemist opening. No, wait, what?
No, it was what? Darker Than Black.
Darker Than Black. Yeah, okay, I
about it.
Yeah, I liked the very interesting debate, particularly those three opinions. I would like the idea that someone like kept track of those three opinions and was like, "Oh yeah, those three opinions were great."
Please tell us what the three opinions that we have that are great.
That was just from them saying, especially try. So.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you again for leaving the iTunes review, and you can do that in the iTunes podcast store. I think technically Apple pushed out, by the time you hear this, it won't be recent, but they pushed out a thing that's like, it's not iTunes podcast anymore, it's Apple podcasts. I don't know what that means for the future. Anyway, no one cares. Shipping corner. Was there anything shipworthy?
No.
They were on a rocket ship.
We should also at least, do we want to have the talk about how Crusadermon was an incest shipper?
No, Koji we really don't. Although I must say, this doesn't have anything to do with Crusadermon. I am unfortunately finally seeing the appeal of
Takuya and Zoe.
Junpei and Zoe.
I only see them as friends, and they hang out in Shibuya. And Zoe's trying to find him a girl.
Were we talking about Takuya or JP?
JP.
Oh yeah, because I'm pretty sure Takuya and Koji are boyfriends. At this point,
but you're supposed to. They had the conversation in the library, and Zoe's all like, "Oh yeah."
And I didn't like it.
My headcanon was that was actually my headcanon is that was actually Koji under he got a magical cloak that turned him into looking like Zoe, so he could get closer to Takuya because he couldn't admit how his overwhelming gayness made him feel.
Why need a cloak?
Why do you see the appeal of JP and Zoe now?
Yeah, not you're on trial. This is Danganronpa. Truth bullet.
Thank you,
Danganronpa.
It's not because of this arc, but it's because, well, I guess if only because this arc made me not like any of the other Zoe ships that are possible. except for maybe Koichi and Zoe, nothing offensive happened there, but...
Wait, they talked?
No.
Exactly. Wait, what happened with Koji and Zoe, though?
Nothing, but they didn't talk at all.
I thought the jacket was still enough evidence to ride that ship.
It's also that, now I see a lot more of the Koji and Takuya stuff, it's because they always actually appear to be on the same wavelength about things, and they actually work really well together as a team. And
then he just and it's really just JP botching it when he does something stupid.
Yeah, and that's
but he's
annoying.
12.
Well, I that doesn't excuse it for me.
I know.
He has a chance to get better. and so does she. And I think the way their issues map onto each other works really well in a much more compelling way than Zoe and Takuya, at least. Stop
Takuya.
Trying to stop trying to force that on a show. It doesn't
stop trying to make that ship happen. It's not gonna happen. Get the heck out of here.
I think it's a cohesive I'm doing some math.
Great.
It's a rectangle. So Zoe likes Takuya. So these are all unreciprocated. Zoe likes Takuya.
Okay.
Yes.
Wait, no.
For some reason.
Sorry, I'm not doing this right. JP likes Zoe. Zoe likes Takuya. Takuya likes Koji. Koji likes JP. It all wraps back together.
Where's Tommy in this?
Tommy's not around yet.
Tommy is only slightly younger than the rest of them. I hope y'all know.
Yeah, that's the weird aspect of
Tommy.
Things.
It's okay. Eight, they're 11.
It's okay to ship anybody who's over 10.
Okay.
Don't you know?
So no one ships Koji and Gotsumon?
Oh god. That's one of the more compelling things that happened is not shipping wise, but just
everything shipping wise, actually.
As platonic relationships in this show go.
So what about Dynasmon and Crusadermon?
Oh yeah, I ship it.
The Jesse and James of Frontier.
Yeah.
The Arukenimon and Mummymon, except they're not funny.
Did we ship Arukenimon and Mummymon? I can't remember.
Oh. No, I don't think we did. One-sided.
Oh yeah, it was pretty one-sided.
It was definitely one-sided.
Unanswered questions.
Okay, so now that primary village is destroyed.
Excuse me, Ashley. Let me push up my glasses.
Excuse me. Village of Beginnings.
Yes, thank you.
Village of Beginnings.
Which, so everyone knows, is the same name as, I don't know, I shouldn't be doing a mocking voice because it'll sound like I'm actually mocking someone in particular. I'm not mocking. The Village
First
of Beginnings.
Second, I thought you said Maki as in try.
I am Maki.
Yeah, you are Maki. Okay.
Anyway, Village of Beginnings is the, I'm pretty sure it's just a Hajimari no Machi in both Adventure and Frontier, and they just, for whatever reason, chose to use a different translated name in Frontier, but in Japanese it's the same in both. Keep going.
Cool. So now that it's destroyed, does that mean that any Digimon that dies, like those Digimon, can never come back?
Wait, that seems super relevant. Why was not mentioned?
doesn't seem that way, because they still turned to eggs and floated away somewhere.
Oh, they did?
Yeah.
Maybe they just land in the middle of space and there's like, oh,
yeah,
oops.
But like, where maybe they can't. I don't know where that went.
Maybe someone ate it.
Oh, boy.
That's a super big question. Like, oh, that's, I thought my biggest question was like, where have the Trail Mom been going? Where have they been taking everyone? But like,
I mean, the moon, apparently.
Well, I mean, I think we'll see in the next episode once we actually go to the moon, but I don't remember there just being like, you know, like the moon's being packed with people or Digimon. I don't think that's a thing.
My other question was, there's one point where characters come and are like, this is gonna get destroyed soon, but weren't they far away? Like, wouldn't it have been destroyed by the time that they relayed that message? I was very confused.
I think it was about the
village of the fire terminal.
Yeah, it was fire terminal.
I was about to ask what happened, because like Steel Town, like the Ronites are talking about stealing a data from Steel Town. They don't do it. They just go with the kids and don't steal, because I guess they wanted to get the Beanstalk Village data more or whatever, but like they leave Steel Town just as is. And so like in my head before I asked the question, I was like, well, maybe they go back to it and steal it later, because it's definitely gone by the end of the show or whatever, by the end of this arc. And then I realized like there's no point to any of these, like they're chased, they're going to all these different locations, but like, assuming they did like fight back the Royal Knights, like the Royal Knights would then, unless they like destroy them, which I guess that's the point, destroy them, which they never able to do. Anyway, it's all pointless. Sorry.
I don't know. Those are my two big questions, and still whether the kids actually had a plan to scan the castle, or if that was just a very confusing.
I think it's very confusing
thing.
So I'm going to call him Waistband Patamon. If Waistband Patamon digivolves into Angemon, would he retain the waistband?
Oh my goodness. I hope so.
And can someone please draw us fan art of Waistband Angemon? Please.
Angemon. Oh man. That's amazing.
Also, I mean, this is a recurring thing, but like the distribution of Trailmon is so, makes no sense. Like, I think it was like finally clarified for good here that there is not just one of each type. That even though they refer to them as if the type is a name, they are not unique. There are multiple of each type, because the ones they encounter in Beanstalk Village and Primary Village or Village of Beginnings are different, but the same types
of the Trailmon.
Yeah. So it's clear now there are multiple of each type. They're never shown together. Like whenever they're in a pack, it's always like one of each, right? Pretty sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's like, Digimon is always so confusing garbage whenever it comes to the distinction between species and individual. Like, it's just like, is in Digimon's blood, I guess, that as soon as you describe a Digimon, you need to make it ambiguous whether you're referring to that one or all of them like it. So let's just accept it and move on.
I actually didn't pick up that they were different Trailmon, but I guess that makes sense.
Well, actually, I guess the main confirmation is that the one they take to the Village of Beginnings has a plate on it that says this is the blank express.
Oh, right.
So, like, that makes it pretty clear. And also, I mean, I don't know if you guys noticed, but, like, they didn't change the Japanese text on that. They left it. I mean, it's still, like, in English letters, but it says Beanstalk Express. Well, I mean, it says, like, Beanstalk in Japanese. Anyway. Yeah. So I have a picture to accompany this. Hold on, let me get back into the Slack. And I'm kind of, like, disturbed I never noticed this before. So I'm going to post the image and wait a couple seconds for it to load. Have Elecmon always pooped lightning?
No.
That's what I was like, yes! Yes. I was like, they are peeing lightning.
They're pooping, actually. Oh, I guess it looks a lot like pee when you just look at the static picture.
Yeah.
It's projectile pee. Oh, God.
It's amazing.
Oh, we'll have a picture in the show notes, unfortunately. The explanation about data only coming from physical forms is garbage. Makes no sense. That's not how, but okay. Zoe's line, I don't think I'll ever have trouble making friends again. That's not, okay, okay. If that's what you want to say, that's how making friends works. Okay. That's all I got.
Yeah.
My unanswered questions sections of my notes always devolve from like genuine questions to just like, this is just garbage. This makes no sense.
Just no.
Ridiculous dialogue draft, baby!
We'll each go around and pick our funniest something-something, most interesting, most touching line from the episodes. We're doing one because we've been recording for too long, and also Frontier isn't worth it. Frontier's not worth it, you hear me?
Are you talking to Frontier?
I'm talking to everybody, all the people who have ears.
Okay, this is episode 42, I believe, and it's Dynasmon, and I just love the tone of his voice and the inflection. So, I think the kids were talking shit about him or something. I don't remember exactly what was said to him, but Dynasmon is like,
"What? How dare you speak such blasphemy, you insignificant one!"
I sort of remember that.
And it's just the way he says it. I love it.
Okay. Wait a second. No. What should I pick? I don't know.
I'm trying to look ahead for my MVP later, and I'm like, were there characters in this arc?
Wow.
Here, I'll go. I'll pick episode 46. I don't know. Zoe and Takuya are in the library, I guess. And Zoe says,
"Yeah, we can't have you thinking now, can we?"
"Well, Maymon thinks I'm good at it."
Wow.
And I thought that was genuinely funny. Like, wow. Exactly. All right. Asher, you go. Jeff.
I don't know why you bothered making me do the randomizer. I can go.
I just have two and I can't choose between them, so if you choose for me, I'm fine with it.
Okay, I don't remember the name of this Digimon, so I wrote down Boomerang Monkeymon, yes. And it's from the episode with the boomerang monkey in it, and the ice one. And they're talking about the television, and this is apparently how they found out information, and he looks at the TV and he says,
"I look into this box and see nothing, and yet I can't stop staring."
And I was like, that describes my relationship with this show right now.
Ouch.
Saying.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay, I'm gonna do episode 40, and I know it's the one with Steel Town, and I don't know, I guess they're just like arguing something, and Takuya is like,
"Yeah, just trust me on this one. Why, have you been right before?"
Such a great like ignorant burn. Like he has no idea. Like, I don't think Neymon knows really what he's saying, but like how mean what he's saying is.
Hanuman comes to Takuya's defense and says, "At least once."
Wow. Yeah.
Terminal judgment.
Seriously, were there characters?
Okay, no. You know why this arc is bad? Because definitely not Rika is not the narrator anymore.
Oh, wait, why isn't she?
I noticed that.
Where'd she go?
I don't know. Rika was like, "I am so out of this garbage,
wait,
you guys."
Did,
like,
the last
why?
One, I definitely remember the last line of the last episode was a narrator, and it was Bokemon. Were they all Bokemon?
The narrator for like the last three or four, yeah.
You think Bokemon kicked her out?
Pokemon. Yeah. I think the voice actress was probably just like, bye. I have cooler things to do.
Did anyone have any thoughts about Superstarmon being Elvis, but also, I mean, I don't have much attachment to Elvis, the actual person, so I'm just like, you're Edamon. Why are you being Edamon?
Right?
Yeah.
He was less creepy Edamon.
Well, it's just weird to be like, when I hear the Elvis voice and Digimon, I'm just like, Edamon. To see it just be like, he's literally just a superstar. And that's like, I'm like, okay, I find it much more natural when Elvis is a creepy dude in a monkey suit. Like,
obviously, that's way more natural.
Also, the predicament to destroy Nefertimon, I thought was surprisingly complex. I guess we addressed it before, that it's like, if they had done that, if they had destroyed her, then they would have protected the one land, but then they still wouldn't have defeated Lucimons or whatever. And everyone would have been, they would have saved the one territory, but then they wouldn't have been able to fight I assume what's going to happen is they're going to fight Lucimon, defeat him, get all the land back. And if they saved one territory but never had to fight Lucimon, they would never, all the Digimon would be left in that one library, which kind of would have been a sad existence. I'd like to see the alternate timeline where they just killed Nefertimon and then all had to live in the library forever.
I would love to live in a library forever.
Yeah. So, any last thoughts for our terminal judgment section? I don't think I actually introduced the section. Oh, sorry. Right, we have a thing we're supposed to use. I'm supposed to go like...
Oh, yeah.
Where did I put it?
Oh, no.
Terminal judgment!
Yes.
Thank you, Trudemon.
Kendo Garurumon, like, using his Heelys on actual rails was, like, quality. I really liked it. Best moment.
Yeah.
MVP time.
If no one else has any last thoughts.
MVP?
Who's your MVP? Kendo Garurumon?
No, Sagittarimon. He's the best. He's the combination of, like, Rageromon and...
Oh, yeah, he is. He's Flamedramon and Rageromon combined. He's the unified spirit form.
I was like, yes! That's all I've ever wanted.
It's Beamon and the Crest of Hope.
It was a maze. I liked it.
Awesome.
I'm sure.
I have to pick an MVP?
Yes.
Seriously, were there any characters?
No. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Jeez. Koichi, I guess, just because, like, he was the only one who had anything remotely interesting going on, and it wasn't even that interesting, because I already know what's going on. I watched this 15 years ago.
And it's, like, it's not like the stuff with him is doled out, so it's, like, he has, like, the tiniest of moments, and that's his thing for this arc. I guess he has two moments. One moment where he's confused. Three. Two moments where he's confused, and one more moment where he, like, is told what's going on a little bit. Okay, four. And then another moment where he's like, meh, what's going on? Why? I'm reflecting at that moment. But that's all he has, and it's...
Cool.
I'm tempted to make the same choice. Andrew, what's your pick?
Tommy.
Yeah, that was my other pick.
When you don't know what to say, you just pick Tommy.
The only one who is reasonable.
And you got two episodes in a row this time.
Yeah, he was like, you know what, bullies? Let me tell you something.
I could have let you die, but I didn't because I'm better than you.
Yeah. Jeffu.
I am going to pick... And because this, like, I'm seriously, like, so blanking on, like, this character development in this arc. I'm going to go with something based on purely design alone and go with the elder Mamemon from the Beanstalk Village episode.
But he threw really everyone under the bus.
Did he?
He told where the thing was.
He's an old person. He's allowed to be bad.
Also, the mechanics of that information gathering and so garbage anyway. So he's not even like he's just Mamemon elder. I wish I had a clip of Shurubimon saying recommendation articulation.
That would be great.
We could always track
recommendation
down the...
articulation.
So we decided to
track him down.
The good time was 1 minute, right?
Yes, the good time.
30 seconds was too short. Okay, I'll start off to get the bar rolling. Okay, I'm gonna recommend. Wait, sorry. Welcome to Recommendation Articulation, our segment where we plug things we want to hug. I'll recommend a show on Netflix called Terrace House, which is a Japanese reality show. If you watch it on Netflix, it has English subtitles. And it is like, I don't really watch much reality television. So from what I hear compared to most reality television, it's much chiller, much calmer. I think it's also based on buzz I've been seeing around internet sphere the past couple months. It is much more accessible than most reality television because of that. But it's interesting if you watch a lot of anime to see some of those like, tropes in real life. Like, I mean, the episodes I caught up to, like episode 15, the like, biggest drama is what someone wrote on the omelet rice that they gave to the person they like. And that caused lots of drama in the house, which is like, she wrote something a little bit like, uncouth, and then that caused him. Anyway, it's I did a terrible job explaining it. It's a really good show. It's really chill. It's really calm. And I use it for practicing Japanese, but it's also useful because you can, Netflix, you can add Japanese subtitles. So I can listen to it purely in Japanese, Japanese subtitles. Even if you're not learning Japanese, it's still interesting, though. And I still heard people who have watched it who are not trying to learn Japanese or just watching it as a show with English subtitles say it's the best show on television. So take that as what you will. I don't think it's that amazing. I think it's pretty good. Okay. Who wants to go next?
I'll go. I will recommend the song Lose Sight by Andrew Bear. Andrew, like the Softman brother. Bear, like the drug company.
Oh. Not the animal?
Yeah, not the animal.
And not the ice cream?
Yeah, Andrew, stop eating her minute.
Okay. Om nom nom.
And this is not a new song. It's something that I heard on Above and Beyond's podcast when I'm like 4 years behind. I actually really enjoy being 4 years behind and hearing how music trends have changed. But the song is very like, it's some mix of trance and glitch and like progressive house. And I really like it. It has a good chill guitar riff, and you should listen to it because it's very summery. It'll give you all that summer nostalgia. That's all.
Okay.
My recommendation. Yes. Shut up. My recommendation is for Umineko, which is short for Umineko When They Cry, which don't even ask me to say that in Japanese. It is it's a sound novel, which is. Nope. You couldn't tell me what the difference between a sound novel and a visual novel is, but it is a fantastic mystery. It's a little gory, so be careful. You can get it on Steam, but you can get the first four episodes on Steam, but a Let's Play of the first four episodes is also up on the Let's Play archive. It's about this family, rich family. They go to an island. They squabble about a massive inheritance, and a witch comes and starts killing them all. And the point of the game is to solve the mystery, and it's fantastic. It is really fantastic.
Cool.
Andrew.
Yay. I'm going to recommend Akka, because why not? Akka 13 Territory Inspection Department is on Crunchyroll. It's about a fictional country with 13 different territories, or 12, I forget. There's a plot, but I mostly remember the food. It is very food-based, and it is beautiful. And then there's some plot involving, like, royalty and stuff, but who cares about that?
You can find the full show notes and comment thread for this episode at podigis.com/405. Jump in the comments to let us know what you thought about this episode, like what you think about Crusader Man's gender and the frontier and whatever else Jeff talked about, that jerk. But you can also go to the episode page to vote on your favorite ridiculous dialogue draft pick and to rate how much you like this arc. You can also let us know your thoughts via social media, email, or with the Will thread, the Digimon subreddit there for this episode, or by having so many flowers on hand that Saban is forced to redub you into a different gender. That's not a good thing. or by destroying the land so much that you revive Lucimon and then you have Lucimon send us a message. Yeah.
If you want to be featured on the next feedback episode, you can also answer our voicemail question. Who is your favorite Trailmon? You can either call 913-CALUMON if you're in the U.S. or email an audio recording of 90 seconds or less to podigious@gmail.com.
Our Agunimon artwork this season is by Jubia Majo on DeviantArt.
Podigious is made possible with your support on Patreon, including our champion Patrimon, Diabjomon, at Tokujo on Twitter, Joe Kido, Kailudamon, Kaiser Washi, Michael Penne, and Red from fellow Digimon podcast, Breakfast with Digimon. Our ultimate Patrimon, Alvaro Crimson Mode, David Graumon, and our mega Patrimon, Marcus, who submitted the topic this week, and Sam Kruwagamon, also on the Moncast. He would like you to check out his partner Tumblr, purple-pixel.tumblr.com. I can read words, and you can find cute drawings from Animal Crossing there.
If you want to support the show, check out our Patreon. For $1 a month, you can join our private group chat on Slack. You can also get cool stuff like commentary tracks and behind-the-scenes notes for $3 a month, a new sticker and button every month for $10, ability to choose episode topics for $15, and a monthly Skype hangout with Jeff and Ashley for $25 a month.
You can find Podigious on Twitter, Tumblr, or Facebook to keep up with the Digimons, hear about upcoming episodes and recordings, and get funny Digimon images and GIFs. You can find me on Tumblr at AsherDashery. Ashley's on Twitter at
AshMcD00.
Andrew's on Twitter at
DrewSoftman.
And Jeff's on Twitter at
DefinitelyJeff.
Don't share the podcast with your friends who are not willing to sacrifice themselves to save the world.
No, don't share the friends. Don't share the friends. All right.
Don't share your friends.
Don't share your friends with the podcast. Yeah.
Don't share the podcast with friends who wouldn't sacrifice themselves to save a library.
Ooh. Yeah, libraries are forever.
Yeah. And do share the podcast with your friends who will lend you their library card, and you can be library card buddies. And join us next time as we cover the final arc of Frontier, the final Lucemon Frontier.
Final Frontier.
Bye.
Bye.
And remember, never stop digivolving.
Oh, yeah, Jeff, your company is in the top 150 global licensors of 2016.
That's a thing?
That's a dumb thing. That doesn't mean anything.
Is Ashley Dark Ashley today? What's going on here?
That's normal, Ashley.
I might be slightly Dark Ashley.
I'm Dark Andrew right now because I'm sick still.
Andrew, I'm pretty sure you're sick for about 70% of our recordings.
No one was planning a gender topic or anything, right?
I think we've all given up. We've all lost heart.
Also, what the hell is a pulpit? I've never heard that before.
What? Really?
A bully pulpit? Or just a pulpit?
I don't know what a pulpit is until this week.
Oh, but you know what it is now.
Sort of. It's a religious thing.
I mean, it is. It's like the most common definition.
Yeah, it's usually used in that way, yes. But it's like...
But this specific reference is not that.
Yeah,
a bully pulpit is a conspicuous position that provides an opportunity to speak out and be listened to. So really, there's nothing to... It's literally just like they auto-completed a phrase that started with bully.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, no child is going to get this. It's like a Teddy Roosevelt reference or something.
I mean, kids have teddy bears, and that means they are close to...
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I know.
Anyway, this week we're looking at the arc, according to these notes. This week we're looking at the Royal Knights arc of Digimon Frontier,
In episode 39, The Man in the Moon is You, a.k.a. Fly Me to the Moon and Let Me Play Among the Starmon, the kids wake up in a neighborhood without any cell signal and struggle to get a taxi back to their hotel.
Actually, Asher, I was hoping you would sing the Fly Me to the Moon.
No, thanks.
Okay.
I don't know the song that well. It's like, what? Fly me to the moon and let me play among... I actually don't know it that well.
I mean, I only know it from Evangelion, so...
So do I, and I don't like Evangelion.
Is it Evangelion?
I think it's... you mean...
I don't like it.
It's not... I don't like Evangelion. I will say, yeah.
No, that's sacrilege there. No,
Asher and really I agree. Not. High five.
Yeah.
Have the anime gods heard that, Asher?
Yeah, they have. If you look at it from the point of view of anyone who is not a cis boy, though, it's really not that great.
I mean, it's arguable whether it's that great from the perspective of cis boys, too. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Are we an Evangelion podcast now?
Yes.
Yep, we were rebranded and everything.
Podcast, I would die, and I would burn that anime. People would hate me forever.
Same. We'd be in the same boat, Ashley.
Ashley, hating Evangelion is not new. I think it's actually not. Like, in terms of like what is the like the trend, it is like more anti-trend to say Evangelion's good now.
Oh yeah,
that's a more recent trend.
Right. It's a recent trend because like
very recent.
The kind of like dominant meme these days is just Shinji getting the damn machine or whatever, getting the damn Eva,
getting the robot Shinji.
Yeah, the robot. That's what. Yeah,
I just... Scott really likes it, so then I always feel bad not liking it.
Yeah, but it also, like...
You don't have to feel bad about not liking things. There's a song! I'll teach you the song. It's okay to not like things. It's okay, but don't be a dick about it. It's okay to not like things. Don't be a dick about the things you don't like. And you can thank Tumblr for that song.
Okay.
Okay.
Andrew, in episode 40.
A poorly utilized thesaurus tries to steal from the kids on the way to Steel Town, but instead they steal themselves for the introduction of even more unimportant characters. Also-mon.
Furthermore-mon defeats Also-mon.
Also, Angemon dies again. Take that, adventure!
I do kind of like to imagine, like, a Frontier scriptwriter being like, ha, they only had one Angemon death in Adventure. We're going to have two.
Honestly, like, they had, that's the third one so far. if we're counting Ophanimon as well, do you want to count Cherubimon too? Like, there's a lot of angels in this.
I was just counting Seraphimon and Angemon because I was just thinking of them as the same evolutionary line.
Koji reunites with a friend from his old rock band before his
meteoric.
What the hell did I say?
Meteorotic.
Ooh.
Wait, is that erotic or idiotic?
What?
Well, I'm sure what was going on with between those two was pretty meteorotic.
Let's leave it for shipping corner.
Koji reunites with a friend from his old rock band before his meteoric. Okay, Koji.
Places that we like were tourists at for like half an episode. So, yeah,
wasn't even that interesting of a tour.
A 3-hour tour. Gilling the Island reference.
Yes, we got it.
I didn't get it.
Well,
Ashley didn't
get off this podcast, Ashley.
Ashley didn't have Nick at Night, so.
I mean, I never watched it, but like, Softmans know a lot of theme tunes to shows we've never watched.
Yeah, that's also partly your school's fault.
That one was not. That one was Dad's fault.
I know, but the Mr. Ed theme and maybe Bewitched.
Yes.
Okay, Ashley,
definitely Bewitched.
I'm out.
You out? I up? Okay, let me stretch.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Stretchy.
Okay, well, that's 5 minutes, so let's do Trans Goblet iTunes review. So we wanted to thank someone. I'm so bad at this. I'm so bad at, like, the sincere thanks. Like, I have a sincere thanks in my heart.
You have no sincere.
And then, like, when I say it, it just sounds so insincere and so, like...
It's just the tone of your voice.
It's my voice. I should fix my voice.
Yeah, you should.
You can't fix your voice. It's who you are, Jeff.
Shared. Okay, what were you going to say?
The Nefertimon thing.
Share the podcast with your friends who ask you to murder them so that you can save the world.
Don't share the podcast with your friends who are not willing to sacrifice themselves to save the world.
No, don't share the friends. Don't share the friends. All right.
Don't share your friends.
Don't share your friends with the podcast.
Don't share the podcast with friends who wouldn't sacrifice themselves to save a library.
Ooh. Yeah, libraries are forever.
Yeah. And do share the podcast with your friends who will lend you their library card. And you can be library card buddies.
Is that legal?
I was about to say the same thing.
until the library cops come find you and arrest you into library jail.
My library number and login with somebody in Japan because I wanted him to have access to books, which is probably not legal. Shh.
Didn't you tell me to get my own library card?
Yeah, get your own library card. It's easy for you to get a library card.
I actually use library facilities more regularly than you do. I just don't have a library card. Is that better or worse?
What?
I mean, like my calligraphy classes are in a library.
I think it's worse. I think that means you're just leeching off the library.
So did we get it? I think we got it. Like, I think we can use that.
There's something in there that's usable.